A robed woman, draped with a blue sash, holds aloft a brightly shining torch. Columbia, Sony Pictures Entertainment Company. A golden wreath frames a growling lion's head. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Flat, snow-covered fields abutting a dense forest. In a bungalow, a bald, middle-aged man answers his landline telephone.
What kind is it?
I don't know.
Right.
At the frame?
Dark.
Postmark.
Same as last time.
And no note.
No. I'm too sorry, Henrik.
The caller, Henrik, removes his glasses and hangs up. On his desk lies a pressed flower in a frame. Columbia Pictures and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures present a Scott Rudin Yellow Bird production, a David Fincher film. Motor oil moves like mercury along black leather and the vulcanized rubber of a car tire. The girl with the dragon tattoo. A bound and gagged woman lies struggling in a pool of the black liquid. It runs between the keys of a computer keyboard and spills from the full lips of a beautiful woman. Oil washes over the woman. She floats in space in the fetal position. A match is struck. Computer cables glide forth like tentacles. Two lovers, drenched in glutinous black oil, kiss and part lips. The flaming match lands in a woman's wide-open eye, which bursts into flames. Engulfed in flames, a skull and crossbones melts. Hands reach for the face of a rugged-looking man. Slender tendrils issue from the dark recess of an eye. A flaming dragon beats its wings. The tendrils grow into thorny shoots. As the plant consumes the woman's face, flowers take the place of her eyes. A multitude of hands cover the rugged man's face. A naked male figure sinks beneath water. A slender woman with a tattoo of a dragon on her back. A real dragon bursts out through her skin. A fist is clenched and slammed into the woman's face, shattering. Another punch takes her head clean off. A wasp burrows up through an eyeball and takes flight. Daniel Craig, Rooney Mara, Christopher Plummer, Stellan Skarsgård, Stephen Burkoff, Robin Wright, Jorrit van Wageningen, Jolie Richardson, Geraldine James. Hands envelop a woman's face as a flower blooms. The faces of two lovers merge as they kiss. Wasps swarm from a woman's wide-open mouth. Coarse hairs rupture through leathery skin. A tangle of cables and computer parts writhes as a man vomits coins. A woman bursts up through a surface and gasps for air. Journalist Mikael Blomqvist is mobbed by reporters as he leaves a courthouse.
What is this? Media event of the year.
Don't try to play it down, Mikael. It won't work.
Don't try and play it up. That won't work either.
More reporters surround him outside.
Mikael, will you appeal?
Yes. I'll appeal to you, Vigo.
Mikael goes.
Up until today, Mr. Blomqvist was able to play the victim, the brave journalist going up against Goliath.
I don't know why malicious intent couldn't be proven. When you call a guy a criminal, you have nothing to back it up.
But if you want to say these things...
Michael Blomqvist likes publicity.
Just not this guy.
There's really no greater disgrace for journalists than libel.
Smart.
He enters a cafe.
Can I get that sandwich then?
Against financier Hans Erik.
And a black coffee.
Blomqvist claimed Wennerström, founder and president of the Wennerström Group, used state funds intended for industrial development in Poland in an arms deal with the right-wing Ustashi in Croatia.
I have nothing against Mr. Blomqvist. He's a fine journalist who I don't believe is guided by malice. But what he wrote was inaccurate. And inaccuracies can't go unanswered. All journalists have to accept, like the rest of us, actions have consequences.
Blomqvist was ordered to pay 600,000 Swedish kronor in damages and
can I
all court
get a packet of Marlboro Red?
Could be significantly more.
And a lighter.
An olive-skinned woman behind the counter hands him cigarettes. Rugged Mikael stands outside. He puts a cigarette in his mouth and throws the rest away. Fueling the cigarette from the wind, he sparks up and takes a long, deep drag. Heavy rain beats down. Sheltering under an umbrella, Mikael hurries across a road to the offices of his publication, Millennium. As he enters, his staff fall silent and turn to look at him. Mikkel climbs steps to an office on the first floor. A slender blonde woman in her 40s rises from behind her desk and removes her thick-rimmed spectacles.
Where have you been?
Walking. Thank you.
Smoking?
Yeah. Just what?
A guy steps up behind Mikkel. The woman Erica shoos him away. Mikkel steps into Erica's office.
TV4 called. I told them no statement until we've read the judgment in its entirety.
Well, I have. No one else?
Everyone who's ever wanted to see you humiliated.
Been on the phone all morning, then?
I'm as much to blame for this as you.
You are? You wrote it?
I read it. I ran it.
Not the same.
Our credibility isn't dead yet.
Mine is.
He glances at Erica, then looks at the floor.
I'm tired. I'm going to go home, crawl under the duvet for a week.
Erica steps up close to him. They nuzzle noses.
I'll call Gregor, tell him I'm not coming home.
Two men, Armansky and Froda, sit in a boardroom.
It's possible we could wait forever.
You called her and spoke to her, didn't you?
I'm afraid that doesn't mean much.
A woman hairs up outside on a motorbike.
No one here particularly likes her. I find it's much better if she works from home.
But you told her I wanted to meet with her.
But I've told her many more times I prefer her not to meet clients.
You like her?
Very much. She's one of the best investigators I have, as you saw from her report.
But?
I'm concerned you won't like her. She's different.
In what way?
In every way.
The woman swipes herself into the building, her helmet now removed to reveal a jet-black Mohican.
Miss Salander is here.
Androgynous and lean, with dark eyes and a deathly pallor, Lisbeth Salander steps into the glass-walled boardroom.
Lisbeth, Mr. Dirk Froda.
How do you do?
She removes her rucksack and sets it down with her motorcycle helmet as she takes a seat at the opposite end of the long boardroom table. Armansky and Froda sit back down.
Something wrong with the report?
Oh, it was quite thorough. But I'm also interested in what's not in it.
There's nothing not in it.
Your opinion of him isn't.
I'm not paid to give my opinion.
So you don't have one?
Lisbeth looks away. Frodo regards her calmly.
He's clean, in my opinion.
You mean he's hygienic?
He's who he presents himself to be. In his business, that's an asset.
Well, there's less in his asset column after his conviction today.
True. He made a fool of himself, if it happened that way.
Are you suggesting that he was set up?
That was never part of my assignment.
But you're right. He did make a fool of himself professionally. How much of a fool did he make of himself financially?
The judgment will just about empty his savings. May I go?
Moment. Your report is light in another area. His personal life. Anything you chose not to disclose?
Nothing that warranted inclusion.
Does that mean yes or no?
I think what Miss Salander means, and I agree, is that everyone has a right to a certain amount of privacy, even if they're being investigated.
Not in this case. I need to know if there's anything about him I might find unsavory, even if she doesn't.
Froda glares at Armansky, then turns his eyes to Lisbeth.
He's had a long-standing sexual relationship with his co-editor of the magazine. It wrecked his marriage, but not hers. Sometimes he performs cunnilingus. Not often enough, in my opinion.
She scowls.
Oh, you're right not to include that.
I know.
A monolithic tower block. In her apartment, Lisbeth tips dry noodles into a bowl, runs them under a tap and heats them in a microwave. A cigarette hangs from her lips as she grabs a Coke from the virtually empty fridge. Swigging some, she takes a seat at a laptop on a desk in the next room and calls up a page of information on Dirk Froda. Occupation, head counsel. Company, Vanguard Industries. Department, legal. Country, Sweden. Her cigarette smokes in an ashtray as she grabs her noodles from the microwave. Emails addressed to Mikkel come through to her laptop. One from Johan Jolin asks, are you available for an interview? Read the Wennerstrom verdict. She sits back down, googles Wennerstrom, and skims over his Wikipedia page before looking at a bland-looking bio. The top line reads, Hans-Erik Wennerstrom, Vanguard Industries, Financial Division, 1971-72. A gathering at Mikkel's posh apartment.
You needed a better attorney. You needed your sister.
She offered.
He declined.
She hoped.
Never a good idea mixing family and business.
I would have lost anyway, sir.
It wasn't even about Mikkel. It was about Wennerstrom sending a message to the press and the FSA saying don't ask questions. Cheer up.
Erica breaks away from her husband. Mikkel crosses to his daughter, Pernilla.
Dad.
Nila, you don't have to worry about me.
Mom's worried.
About me?
About the money.
Mikkel sighs and sips from a tall glass of red wine. Elizabeth lights a cigarette as she strolls up outside a luxurious apartment building, her hair concealed beneath a woolly hat. She stands with her back to the door as a glamorous-looking woman punches a security code into a keypad and goes inside. Elizabeth draws on a cigarette, then tosses it and punches the code in at the door. She climbs a staircase from the marble lobby and reads a list of residents' names on the wall. Listed on the sixth floor are Gedda and Wennerstrom. Elizabeth descends into the basement. She finds a local area network Ethernet hub and photographs it with a digital camera. She photographs various junction boxes and a fuse box, then slips out of the building past a tall, broad-shouldered man waiting at the door. Wennerstrom gets out of a car and approaches him as Elizabeth walks away. She glances back over her shoulder and walks on.
Good evening.
Pernilla sits at the dinner table.
Nila, what are you doing?
Nothing.
Are you serious?
I don't want to talk about it since I know you won't approve.
Nila.
Light of life.
Light of what?
Nila looks at her phone. The seated guests all check theirs. It's Mikael's phone that's ringing. He answers it.
Hello?
Herr Blomqvist.
Yeah?
Forgive me for intruding on your Christmas. My name is Dirk Fruder.
I'm an attorney. I represent Henrik Wanger. Perhaps you've heard of him?
Yeah, of course I have.
Well, he'd love to talk to you about a private matter.
This is an awkward moment.
I'm sorry, I'm about to sit down to a Christmas dinner myself.
No, that's not exactly what I meant.
Oh, yes.
As you're referring to your recent legal problems, that has provided us
with much amusement.
I'm sorry?
Herr Wanger has little love for Herr Wennerstrom either.
Have him call me.
But he would love to speak to you in person, if possible. Up north.
In Hedestad.
That's not going to be possible.
Herr Blomqvist, he's far too old to make a trip to Stockholm, please.
Be so kind as to consider.
Hedestad is lovely in the winter.
I'll call you back on this number. Okay?
Night. Erica wakes in Mikael's bed to find herself alone. She gets up and pads through to the open-plan living space where Mikael sits in his boxer shorts at a laptop.
Usually when I wake up in a cold bed, it's at home.
I'm sorry.
What are you doing?
I'm writing a press release.
Saying?
He puts his glasses down on the desk.
You're taking over as publisher. You're very sorry for any nuisance Mr. Wennerstrom has caused. I can't be reached for comment.
Are you giving up?
Stepping aside.
This makes me sick.
He closes the laptop. Heavy snowfall flutters on blusty winds as a long passenger train makes its slow approach to a station nestled amidst craggy white mountains. On board, a downbeat Mikael stares out of the window and heaves a sigh. The train pulls in at the station, head a stop, and Mikael disembarks. Braced against the cold, Mikael strolls across the platform and sees Frodo waiting for him by his Mercedes. They drive away along a bridge.
First time in Hedestad?
And the last.
Oh, don't say that. It's lovely in the spring.
You said it would be lovely in the winter.
Well, this is unseasonable.
Well, I'll be on the 4:30 train back to Stockholm.
Unless we get snowed in. I'm joking. You'll be home tonight, if that's what you wish.
They make a left turn off the main road and drive along a track flanked by bald, wiry trees. The bare limbs and branches are reflected in the windscreen as Mikael squints to discern two winking lights through the heavy snowfall, their lamps illuminating the entrance to the grounds of Frodo's palatial mansion house. The house is a wide two-story building with two rows of tall, equally spaced windows and a triangular pediment over the central front door. They pass between two perfectly manicured trees, carving fresh tire tracks in the snow as they sweep into the drive. They get out.
Welcome. Come inside. It's warm.
How do you do?
Henrik Fangler shows them into a cozy study where tea awaits them on a table between two brown leather armchairs.
So?
Mikael sits.
What do you know about me?
Well, you used to run one of the largest industrial firms in the country.
Used to. That's correct.
Well, I didn't mean that. Right.
My grandfather forged the tracks that the 4:30 train would take you home. We stitched this country together. We made the steel, milled the lumber that built modern Sweden. And what do you think our most profitable product now is? Fertilizer. Oh, I'm not obsessed by the declining health of the company, but I am with the settling of accounts. And the clock is ticking. I need your help.
I'm doing what?
Officially assisting with my memoirs. But what you'll really be doing is solving a mystery by doing what you do so well. Your recent legal mishap notwithstanding. You will be investigating thieves, misers, bullies, the most detestable collection of people that you will ever meet. My family.
Lisbeth knocks on the door of an apartment. A guy, Plague, opens up.
Would you like to sit? I could possibly clear a place if necessary.
Did you make it?
Have you something for me?
She hands him some cash.
I am on welfare. I do not administer it. This is not enough.
She holds her hand out for the money's return. Plague relents and keeps it. In exchange, he hands her an electronic device. She takes a quick look at it and goes.
No, thank you.
Henrik shows Mikael a photo of a woman.
This is Harriet, the granddaughter of my brother, Richard. Richard was a Nazi of the First Order, joining the Nationalist Socialist Freedom League when he was 17. Isn't it interesting how fascists always steal the world freedom? the 430. Yes, I know, okay. Anyway, Richard died a martyr to the Nazi cause in 1940. Missed all the real excitement. But not the opportunity to regularly beat his wife, Margareta, and their son, Gottfried. Now, Gottfried, Harriet's father, was what they used to call a good time charlatan.
Well, they still call him that.
Do they? Okay. He was a charmer, a ladies' man, and a drunk. In other words, a born salesman, which he did for the company, traveling around and taking clients out to dinner and so forth.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
That's right. Anyway, he died in 1965, drowned, drunk, here on the island. His wife, Isabella, who had been pretty much useless as a parent before, became even more so after his death, which is when I began looking after the children. Martin, who runs Bagger Industries now that I'm retired.
That's right, I googled him.
And Harriet.
He takes her photo out of the album.
She was bright, curious, a winning combination in any person.
And beautiful.
Yeah.
Something happened to her.
Someone in the family murdered Harriet. And for the past 40 years, has been trying to drive me insane.
A flashback.
It was September 24th, 1966, a Saturday. Harriet was 16. My brothers and their wives and children and grandchildren were all gathered here for our loathsome annual board meeting and dinner. It was also the day the yacht club held their autumn parade. Harriet, with one or two school friends, went into town to see it. She returned a little after 2 o'clock. She came into the parlor. She asked if she could talk to me. I honestly don't remember what I was doing that I thought was more important, but I told her to give me a few minutes. It was during those few minutes that something else occurred.
There's a car crash on a nearby bridge.
The accident had nothing to do with Harriet. And yet everything. It was chaos as everybody put down what they were doing. Police, ambulance, fire brigade, reporters, photographers, onlookers all quickly arrived from town, just as we on the island, the family, hurried to the bridge from our side. The driver of the car, a man named Oronson, was pinned and severely injured. We tried desperately to pry him loose with our hands, since metal tools might spark. It was an hour after the crash that Harriet was in the kitchen. Anna herself saw her.
Anna is a maid. She sees Harriet go outside.
Well, we finally got poor Oronson out of his car off to the hospital, just as we from our side slowly drifted back to the house. The sun was down, the excitement over. We sat down to dinner. It was then that I noticed Harriet wasn't there. And she wasn't there the next morning, or the next 40 years.
Mikael looks intrigued and sips a whiskey.
What was she going to tell me? Why didn't I make time for her? Why didn't I listen?
And she couldn't have just run away?
No, not without being seen. The firemen stayed out all night on the bridge, pumping up gasoline. No one swam across or took a boat. All the boats were still tied up on this side Sunday. Believe me, I checked.
They go upstairs.
She couldn't have just fallen and drowned.
Oh, no, the currents aren't strong here. Anything that falls in the water turns up nearby. Like her father. His body didn't drift more than 10 meters when he drowned the year before. Oh, no. Someone killed her. Someone on the island that day. Someone close enough to know what she used to give me each year on my birthday.
They enter an attic room.
Those are from her. The rest from her killer.
Henrik gestures to a large collection of framed pressed flowers adorning the walls. Mikael steps forward and scrutinizes them.
Who knows about this?
That's me, the police, the killer. And now you.
Mikael frowns and looks at the framed flowers again. Evening. A train leaves Hedestad station. Henrik and Mikael have dinner together.
After the police investigation evaporated, I kept at it, studying all the information there was. I have spent half my life examining the events of a single day.
I understand your frustration, but what you're asking me to do, it's a waste of money.
But we haven't discussed your fee.
We don't need to. Thank you. I can't find something you've been unable to find in 40 years.
You don't know that. You have a very keen investigative mind. Here's what I propose. You come, stay on the island. I have a nice little cottage by the water you can use. You study the material I send you. You find something I've missed, or you don't.
What you're asking me to do is set aside my life and career.
Think of this as a well-deserved holiday, a way of avoiding all those people that you might want to avoid right now. As for compensation, I'll pay you double your salary for as many months as it takes. I'll quadruple it if you solve the mystery. I'm not done. I will throw in one more thing, even though you're a terrible negotiator. It's something you want more than anything else, and it can't be bought at any price. So let me give it to you. Hans Erik Wennerström. He began his career working for me, and I have followed it with interest, shall we say, ever since.
Henrik sips a glass of red wine.
You were right about him. You just couldn't prove it.
Night. In the machine room of Wennerström's apartment building, Lisbeth connects the electronic device Plague gave her to one of the electronic data hubs. She clutches a torch between her teeth as she works. Having concealed the devices, she leaves. Erica comes into the Millennium office and finds Mikael packing his bags.
We're in the middle of the worst crisis ever, and you're writing a memoir.
You fired me. I need something to do.
You fired you?
She looks incredulous as he heads off.
I need you here, not the North Pole. Mikael, you know what this is going to look like.
Yeah. Like I've been gutted, like I'm running away. I am. Mm-hmm. Wennerström wants to see me waving a white flag, not a red flag. The more it looks like there's a problem between you and me, the more it'll satisfy.
There is a problem between you and me. He won't be satisfied until he shuts us down. You're leaving me here to fight him alone.
It's 4 hours by train.
He gives her a kiss, which she reluctantly accepts.
It's not the North Pole.
He goes, and she stares after him, unconvinced. Lisbeth sits in a cafe, a book by Bobby Fischer in front of her. It's decorated with a Christmas bow. She removes a label from the spine of the book, then checks her mobile phone. Later, she walks up a street outside an apartment block. Inside, she walks along a corridor to an apartment and stops at the door. She listens at the door, then knocks again. Getting no response, she opens the door and steps into the apartment.
Hey, hey.
She steps into the living room of the apartment and looks around. She spots a man lying motionless on the floor beside a table on which is a chessboard. She goes to him and checks his pulse, then hurries away. A train pulls into Hedestad station. A thermometer on the wall shows it's 2 below zero. Mikael disembarks from the train and waves to a taxi driver out on the road. The taxi makes its way over the bridge linking the island to the mainland. The cabbie drops Mikael and his luggage off at the cottage in the grounds of Henrik's house and drives away. as Mikkel carries the bags into the house. Inside the cottage, Mikkel makes a call on his mobile and wanders into the bathroom. He tries another number and makes his way into the bedroom where fresh bedding has been put out. He opens a window and lets a tabby cat into the cottage. It looks expectantly at him.
What? Some milk?
He goes into the kitchen and opens the fridge, which turns out to be empty. The cat stares up at him. Mikkel walks away from the cottage, trying to get a signal for his phone. He looks frustrated. He buys provisions in a shop. He buys a couple of cans of cat food. Leaving the shop, a cigarette dangles from his mouth. He tries the phone again. Back at the cottage, the cat tucks into a bowl of cat food, while Mikkel, wrapped in a blanket, tears pages out of a book and tosses them on the fire, which is barely alight. He throws the book, which is by Kurt Vonnegut, on the floor. Elizabeth sits on the floor in a hospital corridor. She gets up as a doctor approaches.
You're Mr. Palmgren's daughter?
He's bored. He doesn't have a daughter. Please.
He's had severe cerebral hemorrhaging, either from the fall itself or from a stroke that led to the fall. His blood pressure is still high. I'm hopeful he'll regain consciousness, but that's not assured. And it's possible, even if he does, that there will be neurological damage.
On the island, a man drags a handcart laden with boxes towards the cottage. Mikkel is in bed asleep with the cat. Mikkel rouses from his slumber and sits up in bed, looking around groggily. He pulls on his dressing gown. He opens the door to the man with the handcuff.
Hi, I'm Gunnar, the caretaker.
Oh, hey.
Gunnar carries in one of the boxes from the handcart.
You want to put it in there?
Okay.
Mikkel quickly shuts the door against the cold. Later, he brings Gunnar a drink as Gunnar lights the fire.
You're an author.
Well, I'm doing a biography of Herr Wenger.
Huh. I saw you on television.
That's unfortunate.
Bit of trouble, I guess. No jail time, though. That's good.
No.
Cost you a lot of money, though, yeah?
Mikkel bridles.
Yeah. It's good.
Outside with Henrik.
The entire island is owned by my family. You're closest neighbor is my brother, Harald.
Another Nazi, if you can believe. Two in the family. Oh, yes, he's quite detestable, to put it nicely. But you probably never see him. He's a recluse.
He was there that day?
Indeed, he was.
His daughter, Cecilia, lives over there.
They don't speak.
Does anybody speak to anybody on this island?
Actually, Isabella, Harriet's mother, who lives there. She speaks to Harald, which is one of the reasons I don't speak to her.
Right.
Cecilia's brother, Birger, lives over there.
Who doesn't he speak to?
You, probably, but you wouldn't want him to. He can be just as unpleasant as Harald.
Quickly losing track of who's who here.
Oh, how you'd wish it were always so. Soon you will know us all, only too well, with my apologies.
Now, out there, my grandnephew Martin's house, Harriet's brother.
Who speaks to him?
I speak to him. He runs the company now, as I think I told you. Oh, someone shooting his dinner. Gunnar, probably.
Oh, yes, I met him earlier.
He was 19 when Harriet disappeared. Oh, he lives over there.
And you live there?
Sorry?
Your house.
Oh, yes. Yes, you're right.
The man who hires a detective should always be kept on the suspects list.
Mikael nods. Back at the cottage, he pins pictures of all the potential suspects in the case to a wall, like in a police incident room. He's pictures of them as they were in the 60s and as they are now. He uses post-it notes to map out the sequence of events. He sticks one up, Parade Street, then another, Accident Bridge. The names of the suspects are alongside the events. Mikael sits at his desk and highlights a line of text in a document with a marker pen. Officer Morel informed by telephone of situation, 9:45 p.m. In flashback, Morel rides on a motor launch under the bridge. Mikael highlights another line of text. Officer Morel traveled to site in patrol boat. Morel on site, Hedeby Island. 10:19 p.m. Morel inspects site. In flashback, Morel arrives to interview the family. Henrik introduces Isabella to Morel. A note, the mother was inebriated. Mikael highlights more lines of text in the report. Morel is shown into Harriet's room. He looks in a handbag. He flicks through a notebook. Mikael continues highlighting text in the report. In flashback, Morel rejoins the family in the living room. He makes notes as an anxious-looking Henrik talks to him. Mikael highlights more lines of text. Morel authorizes our patrol boat and two volunteer craft to begin 11:15 p.m. The craft search the area near the Wenger estate, then move up to inspect the water near the bridge. Daybreak. Men with guns and dogs begin a search of the island. A man checks an old metal crate, another a derelict building. He signals there's nothing there.
The fact that I never found a body was not surprising. You can't dig up an entire island.
Mikael interviews Morel.
But neither could I find the motive. Was it spontaneous? Was it calculated? Did she know something someone wished she didn't? Was it about business?
Business? Well, she was 16.
And very bright. Henrik told me, and many others, he could easily see her running the company one day.
She was with some friends that day at a parade.
She told them she was feeling unwell. She left early. But they also told me she kept secrets from them, too. The main thing I learned was that teenage girls are complicated.
I have one.
Then you know.
I wanted to ask you about this.
Harriet's notebook.
She received that from Henrik the Christmas before.
He pushes it back to Mikael.
I've studied it more times than I can say. I know every page of it.
It's the last page that I was curious about.
As was I.
It's a list of names, numbers, and must have some significance.
They were all local phone numbers. The first belonged to a woman called Margot, whose mother was Magda, who denied knowing Harriet. The fourth, R.L., belonged to Rosemary Larson, an elderly woman who died some years before. The other three were not connected in any way that I could find.
I reminded you of things you'd rather forget, and I'm sorry.
I can't forget. It's my Rebecca case.
I don't know what that is.
Every policeman has at least one unsolved case to obsess over. Back then, we had an officer, Torstensson. Year after year, he kept going back to this Rebecca case, taking out the files, studying them over and over. We were young. We laughed at him.
And that was also a missing girl case?
No. That's not why I mentioned it. I'm talking about the soul of a policeman. Poor old Torstensson never solved it, and he never let it go.
On a train, Mikael looks at the notebook again. In an office.
So how's Mr. Thornburn doing? I heard he had a stroke of some kind. Huh? It's terrible. Now, what exactly do you do at the security company?
Make coffee, sort mail.
But not full-time. Not even part-time consistently. They somehow got along without coffee or mail in July and August.
The man, Mr. Bjorman, flicks through Lisbeth's file. She looks uncomfortable.
How much do you make there?
Enough.
How much is your rent?
I pay my rent.
He eyes her coolly across the desk.
And when was the last time you were late?
Never.
You think that thing through your eyebrow makes you attractive?
He refers to one of her pierce rings.
Here's the problem. There's a discrepancy between the obligation of Mr. Palmgren's guardianship and the management of your finances.
There's no discrepancy or problem. It was clear to him I could manage my own finances.
It's not clear to me.
I'm not a child.
No, you are not. But you were. And between then and now, you were committed to the locked ward of St. Stephen's, where you continued to display violent aggression. And you failed to adapt to four foster homes. Were arrested twice for intoxication, twice for narcotics, again for assault, smashing a bottle into a man's face. And that's not even that long ago. Now, you may have conned Mr. Palmgren into thinking that you have changed, but when I'm looking at this, not to mention the way you're looking at me now, I don't think you have. So, the good old Mr. Palmgren days are over. Starting now, you will be given a monthly allowance. You'll provide me with receipts for your expenses, and if the numbers don't balance, I will have to assume the difference is going to drugs.
I've taken care of myself since I was 10.
State has taken care of you. Miss Hollander, please, look at me. This is important. Since your behavior is elaborately documented in here, it will come as a shock to no one if I chose an alternative to the very lenient arrangement I've just outlined.
She avoids his gaze.
Would you prefer institutionalization?
She keeps looking away. She leaves Bjorman's office with a face like thunder and marches into the lift. Mikhail is walking along the side of a road when a Volvo saloon pulls up alongside him. The driver winds her window down.
Mikhail?
Yes?
I'm leaving.
Oh, hi.
We're going to the same place. Hop in.
Okay, thank you.
He gets in the car. It's dark as they arrive outside Martin's stylish modern house. Hearing them pull up, he opens his front door and smiles.
I found him at Dad's door, halfway up the hill.
I'm afraid I'm a little out of shape.
It's a climb for anyone. I should have warned you.
Come on in. Thank you, Martin.
Henrik says great things about you.
Mm.
No,
Martin.
Leave your shoes on.
Smells wonderful. What are we drinking?
What a place. Look at that view.
I used to work in the company's petrochemical division in Gothenburg. But it was sold, I went with it.
No dark day.
I live in Hong Kong now, but come back to Stockholm for family events. And when I do, I drive up to spend a couple of days with Martin.
It's just the moose station one.
You can blame her, it's wonderful.
Something's left open. Do you like this wine, or you want to try something else?
Oh, no, it's fine.
Martin pours Mikhail another glass and goes to investigate what's been left open.
You're writing a book now, Martin said.
Henrik's biography.
I love Henrik. He's fascinating. Martin, too. Together they are the old Sweden and the new.
Yes, they are.
You know about Harriet, right? You do?
Yes, I do.
The family doesn't want to talk about it, but it can just be swept under the rug.
What can't?
Harriet.
Well, we can talk about it later.
We can talk about it now. Liv knows everything about my crazy family. That's why she'll never marry me.
That's one reason.
Well, I don't want to read about that in the book. Mm. Everything else is fine. Harry, certainly. No. Mm. Everything changed after that. Not just the family, but the company as well.
How so?
We're not Ericsson or Nordea, but we're still the largest family-owned company in the country. At our height, we had 40,000 employees. We have about half of that now, and that downward slide began after my sister's death.
A comment prompts a thoughtful look from Mikhail.
It broke Henrik's entrepreneurial spirit. And his art.
You were here that day, yes?
I came in a little later after the accident on the bridge with the 4:30 train.
Well,
terrible day. The days after. Searching. Not finding. Even worse. This event, Mikael, it has to have a big part in your book.
Score.
They raise their glasses. Lisbeth is round at Mr. Palmgren's house. A woman clears away a tray as Mr. Palmgren stares blankly into the distance. Lisbeth dabs his chin with a serviette, and he appears not to notice. She eyes him.
I got a call from social welfare. I've been assigned a new guardian.
Mr. Palmgren's eyes rove, but he remains expressionless. Lisbeth turns away. In a station, she rides an escalator down to the platform. As she gets off the escalator and walks towards the platform, a man snatches her bag and races onto the up escalator. Lisbeth runs after him and shoves him. They struggle for possession of the bag. Lisbeth smacks the bloke in the face and he falls. Passers-by watch as she takes the bag from him. But as she tries to get away, he gets up and grabs the bag. She kicks him back, then leaps onto the divider between the up and down escalators. She and the bag slide down it to the platform. Clutching the bag, she dashes onto a subway train, which then pulls out of the station. Morning. Mikhail opens his door to a middle-aged woman.
Hi.
Hello.
I thought I'd come over and say hello. I'm Cecilia.
Oh, yes. Please, come in.
She steps into the cottage.
Some coffee?
No, thank you.
She goes through into the living room where he's set up his incident room. She eyes all the photographs stuck to the walls. Mikhail watches her warily.
We are all uncomfortable with the idea of a chronicle of our family.
Not about the family, it's about Henrik and the company.
Like I said.
It's not my intention to present a malicious portrait of anyone.
Unlike the one that landed you in court.
Unlike that one, yes.
So what you're saying is you're not really here to find out what happened to Harriet?
I can't ignore such a dramatic event, but no, that's by no means my focus.
And all those boxes that Gunnar carted down here, which are where? In the closet now? Those weren't Henrik's private investigation. I wonder sometimes who's crazier, my Nazi father or my obsessed uncle.
Since we're talking about her, since you brought her up, what was she like? What was Harriet like?
I'm sure Henrik has told you.
He was my age back then. He couldn't know what was really going on with a teenager any more than I could my own daughter. You were the same age.
Actually, my sister Anita was closer to her in age. She knew Harriet better than anyone. You should talk to her.
Love to. Where is she?
If I had to guess, London.
You don't know where your own sister lives?
I haven't seen her in years. We never really got along.
I'm getting used to that comment.
She hates this place even more than I do. She left. Moved to London, that was it. You couldn't pay her to send a Christmas card, much less visit.
I'll track her down for you.
If you do, and try talking to her about us, don't be surprised if she tells you to fuck off.
Cecilia imperiously sweeps out. A technician looks at Lisbeth's broken laptop.
You're backed up, are you?
Hard drive at home, yeah.
Okay. That's good, because this one's done.
She snatches it back off him and goes. At social services, she's interviewed by Bjorman.
Have you ever had any sexually transmitted diseases? And when was the last time that you were tested for HIV? How many partners have you had in the last month? And how many of those were men?
She regards him coldly.
It's regulation. I have to ask you things. It's a health matter.
Write what you want.
And why do you need such an expensive computer?
For work.
Making coffee, sorting mail.
I shouldn't even have to ask. I should have control of my money.
And you will, once you learn to be sociable. Get along with people. Huh? Can you do that?
She remains poker-faced.
Why don't we start with that? Now.
He gets up and walks around the desk.
Why don't we start with me?
He perches on the desk in front of her. She avoids eye contact and squirms uncomfortably.
You do something for me, I do something for you. It's what normal people do.
She continues to avoid eye contact. He reaches out towards her. She recoils as he picks up her bag, then drops it on the floor.
I want you to have that computer.
She continues staring straight ahead. He reaches a hand towards her. Very, very reluctantly, and still without looking at him, she puts her hand in his. He rubs her hand against his crotch.
Feel that? It's cabotine.
He looks down at her, but she refuses to make eye contact.
Unzip it.
Reluctantly and still looking away, she feels for the zipper. Finally, she glances up at him, then reaches inside his trousers. Quivering with excitement, he reaches down and touches her face.
I like the reticence. It's almost convincing.
He grips her head and forces her face into his crotch. She starts giving him a blowjob. He looks up towards the ceiling as he comes. In the washroom, Lisbeth rinses her mouth out under the tap, then sticks a finger down her throat and forces herself to vomit into the toilet. She steps back into Bierman's office. He comes over to her and hands her bag back together with a check. Lisbeth leaves the office and passes a man operating a floor polisher. Later, she sits on the floor in her apartment, a large dragon tattoo adorning her left shoulder. She listens to music and smokes. Mikael is in a window seat on an airplane. A flight attendant serves him drinks. As she goes, he tips the contents of two miniatures into a glass. In London, he gets out of a taxi and squirts breath freshener in his mouth before going into an investment bank. He talks to a secretary.
Anita Wenger.
He approaches a blonde woman at a desk.
Excuse me. I probably should have made an appointment.
No, it's fine. Please.
Thank you.
Have a seat.
Mikael.
Mikael. How do you do?
How do you do?
So, you're looking for investment counseling.
Well, I would be if I had any money.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
I'm writing a biography of your uncle, Henry. That's why I'm here.
I haven't seen him in over 20 years. Actually, it's a lot more than that. I haven't seen my sister. I haven't seen anyone in that family.
Most of what I'm writing about predates that, so no recollections of that.
Nowhere to start, if that was a question.
Well, then let me narrow it down. I've gotten up to the 1960s, to the event that changed everything in Henrik's life.
Harriet.
He makes notes.
Everything that I know about that, I told to... whatever his name was.
Morel.
My recollections were a lot better than they are now.
I'm not really speaking about the event itself. I just want to get a clearer sense of what Harriet was like.
Just very messed up. Well, just like all us Bangor kids, really, but crazy mother. Drunken father. At least her father wasn't a Nazi.
Was he abusive?
Mine.
No, hers.
Not that I ever saw, but... you could tell that something was going on. And some days she'd be very withdrawn. And then the next minute she'd be putting on makeup and wearing the tightest sweater that she had to school. And then she'd be studying her Bible like a nun. No Van Gogh was ever religious. Can you imagine? She was obviously very unhappy.
She sips a coffee.
So what do you think happened to her?
Everyone knows what.
You don't have any thoughts about who or why?
All that I know is that I felt really sorry for her. I got away when I was 18 and I never went back. And she'd have done the same. But she never made it to 18.
Mr. Bjorman, please. It's Lisbeth Salander.
For a moment.
I'm fine. I'm sorry I missed our appointment. I had a lot of work.
Something the matter?
No, nothing to be concerned about. Actually, I need another advance on my allowance. Can I come to your office tonight?
Why don't you come to my house, huh? Do you have a pen?
I don't need a pen. What's the address?
Looking tense, Lisbeth hangs up and walks briskly away up a street. Evening. Puffing on a cigarette, Lisbeth walks up outside the Bjorman's apartment block and presses the intercom button.
It's me.
She goes inside and walks up a flight of steps. Bjorman comes out of his apartment to meet her.
Lisbeth, come on in.
She walks past him and goes into the apartment. He closes the door behind them, and she turns to face him.
You like it?
It's nice.
It's home. So, what do you need money for this time?
Food.
He steps over to her.
How are you?
She doesn't look at him. He walks away down a corridor, and she follows.
I'm so glad you decided to come and visit.
I just want my money.
Well, let's see if we can help you out with that.
He ushers her into a bedroom. She steps past him, puts her bag down, and starts to take her coat off. He makes to help her.
Wait.
Is there a problem?
I just want to know. Am I going to have to do this every time I need money to eat?
You're so cute when you're sorry.
She leans against the end of the bed. He steps up to her and takes her hand. Then, suddenly, claps a handcuff on her wrist. She tries to run, but he pulls her back. He wrestles her to the floor. The closed bedroom door recedes into the distance, and the screen fades to black. Elizabeth wakes up, face down on the bed. She's been gagged, and her arms and feet are manacled to the bed frame. She struggles as Bjerman finishes fastening her left foot. He grabs hold of her trousers and yanks her up by them, then pushes her t-shirt up over her head. He pulls her trousers down, then rips off her pants. He stands staring at her semi-naked form and unbuckles his trousers. She thrashes wildly as she realizes he's taking his trousers off. German bends down and sticks his face in her backside, inhaling her scent. He climbs onto the bed and straddles her. He takes a condom from his pocket and opens the packet with his teeth.
I forgot to ask you. You like anal sex?
As she thrashes wildly but uselessly, he puts the condom on, then anally rapes her. Her bag sits nearby on the table. A small digital camera pokes out of it. The bridge linking the mainland to the island at night. In the cottage, Mikhail has Harriet's belongings and photos of her school friends laid out on a table. He doesn't notice the cat on the windowsill wanting to be let in. He shakes a puzzle, then adjusts the photos before picking up Harriet's Bible. He sits down on the sofa with it, puts his glasses on, and starts reading some handwritten notes inside it.
Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Through faith, we understand that the world was created by the word of God.
He flicks through the book, then closes it, and lies back on the sofa. He props his glasses up on his forehead and switches his MP3 player back on. In the bedroom of Bjerman's apartment, Lisbeth is now dressed again. She walks stiffly over to her bag and picks it up. Bjerman is in the next room writing a check. He gets up as she shuffles out of the bedroom. He presents her with the check, and she takes it.
I'll drive you home.
I can get home on my own.
Are you sure?
She steps out of the apartment. He watches as she walks away down the stairs. Then he disappears back inside. Lisbeth cuts a lonely figure as she walks slowly and painfully along a dark, deserted street. She makes her way up a flight of stone steps. Arriving back at her apartment, she drops the key and bends down stiffly to retrieve it. Once inside, she puts down her bag and tosses down her keys and the check Bjerman gave her. It's for 10,000 kroner. In the bathroom, Lisbeth takes a couple of paracetamol and gets undressed. She gets in the shower. She lets the water cascade over her and very slowly sits down in the tub. The screen fades to black. Day. Mikael returns to the cottage, clutching a bag of groceries, and sees a silver Mercedes parked outside it. Erica winds the window down as he approaches.
Is it any warmer inside?
No.
I apologize if you've been having financial problems with the magazine during Mikael's absence.
Oh, no, we'll work through them.
Are you sure?
How long do you think you can hang on? 6 months?
That sounds about right.
And I used to be in the newspaper business. We owned 6 dailies back in the 50s.
I still own one, the Courier here in town. In
which I let my nephew Birger run because he can't run anything else.
So what would you say to taking on a partner?
Well, we've never had to consider it before. So we value our independence very much.
Well, independence in publishing is dependent on advertisers. However much you have, you retain. We don't care about content.
Excuse me, did I miss something?
We were talking about investing in the magazine.
Well, I gathered that, but why would you want to?
Well, not out of greed, that's for sure.
I feel so badly that I've taken Mikael away from you at the worst possible time. But now I am convinced that this is the right thing to do, the moral thing. That's one reason. And the enemies of my friends are my enemies.
How long have you been discussing this with them?
I haven't been. They called yesterday and asked me to come on.
Why didn't you tell me?
Why would I? You live in the woods.
So I deserve to be treated like an idiot.
I just wanted to hear what they had to say. You would have said no before they could.
I'm saying it now. It's a bad idea.
You heard me tell them we had 6 months. I lied. Without their money, we will be out of business in 3.
But you don't know this family like I do. They're crazy.
We're not marrying into it.
If we do this, that's exactly what we're doing.
So you want to say no? Let's say no. Instead of 50% of something, let's own 100% of nothing.
She gets up off the sofa and goes through into the bedroom.
Miguel.
What?
I'm leaving this godforsaken island in the morning.
So?
So are you coming to bed or not?
He gets up off the sofa and briefly pets the cat on his way to the bedroom. Elizabeth's in a tattoo parlor. She eyes the tattoo gun.
How much do one of those cost?
Around 3,000. This is really gonna hurt.
She shrugs. He tattoos her foot.
Good call.
She looks away. A business news bulletin.
Petrochemical manufacturer Vanya Industries has taken a controlling interest in Millennium magazine, which, according to analysts, has been in financial trouble.
Millennium is an excellent magazine. We also think it's undervalued right now, which is good business for us.
Well, there's another reason. I don't like bullies.
Are you referring to Mr. Van Nistelrooy?
I'm referring to anyone who tries to sue his enemies into submission.
If Herr Wernerstrom would like to try it again, he will find himself fighting a company that can afford to fight back.
I always admire Hendrik Wanger. He's a titan and a gentleman. But he's also quite old now, which may explain how he could be taken in by a convicted liar.
3:20.
Elizabeth sees the news in a shop. At home, she unpacks her shopping and eats a McDonald's Happy Meal. She intercepts an email from Wernerstrom. Can somebody please explain to me what the fuck is going on with these two assholes? At the cottage, Mikael drops some paperwork.
Shit.
He bends down and picks up the papers. Something catches his eye. It's a set of surveillance photographs of the Wanger Manor. He leafs through them and finds one which shows the ghostly image of a young woman at a window of the house. He takes it over to his incident board and compares it with a photo of Anita. He then tries it beside Harriet. He decides it's Anita and pins it next to her other photo. He finds some snapshots in a paper bag and leafs through them. A couple are of the parade that Harriet went to. He sits at his desk and examines one of them with a magnifying glass. He spots Harriet amongst the spectators. A stamp on the back of the photo reads, Hedda Statskurovin. He scratches his chin thoughtfully. Later, he walks down the street in Hedda Stats, where the photo was taken. He puts his glasses on and compares the photo to the street he's standing in. He looks around and spots a clock outside a building, then looks up and sees a balcony. He enters a building and makes his way up a dark staircase to the balcony. Standing out on it, he compares the view with the one in the photograph. Later, he visits the head of Staats Kurorin.
The current archive is on CDs. The older stuff, still negatives. What general period are you interested in?
September 1966.
The woman gets several files.
Thank you.
She watches as he quickly riffles through the first file.
Is this about Harriet Wange?
You're too young to know about that.
Everyone here grows up knowing about her.
He finds the set of parade photos.
It's how we're taught about strangers.
Bjerman opens the door of his apartment and finds Lisbeth on the step.
Lisbeth?
I need to pay my rent. I need some money.
Oh, come on in.
She steps inside and he closes the door behind them. She turns to face him.
I feel a bit badly. How we left it last time.
Me too.
She tases him in the throat and he collapses unconscious. At the cottage, Mikael puts the files of photos from the local paper on a chair, then sits down at his desk. He's loaded the parade set of photos onto his computer and flicks through them. He finds a couple where Harriet is visible in the crowd. He studies them closely. In Bjerman's apartment, Lisbeth has cable-tied Bjerman's hands to the foot of the bed, and his feet are fastened by means of cable ties screwed to the floor. She also stripped and gagged him. He comes round and starts to panic.
Good. You're alive. You recognize this? I had it with me last time. I set it here, remember? And this snap, you see it? It's not a snap. It's a wide-angle fiber optics lens.
On her bag, she plays the video of him raping her on the TV. Bjerman sees himself on screen dropping his trousers as Lisbeth lies chained face down on the bed. Lisbeth sits down and lights a cigarette.
I thought it was going to be another blowjob, which is disgusting enough. But I misjudged just how sick you are.
She mutes the video. Bjerman watches terrified as she goes over to her bag and takes out a fearsome steel dildo.
Okay, here's what's going to happen.
She walks over to him and pushes him onto his side. He tries to resist, but is powerless to do so. She rams the dildo up his backside. She leaves it lodged in his anus and gets to her feet.
Attention. Look at me.
She tasers his knee.
Once you can sit again, which could be a while, I admit, we're going to go to my bank and tell them that I alone have access to my money. No. After that, you will never contact me again. Each month, you will prepare a report of a meeting we will never have. In it, you'll describe how well I'm doing, how sociable I'm becoming. Then, you will negotiate with the court to have my declaration of incompetence lifted. If you fail, this video will spread across the internet like a virus. No. And if anything should happen to me, if I get run over by a car, if you run me over with a car, this will upload automatically. Nod that you understand.
He does. She picks up his trousers.
Ooh, Gabardini. I'm taking the keys to this apartment because I'll be checking on you. And if I find the girl in here with you, whether she came of her own free will or not.
He nods towards the TV.
No, not the video.
She kicks him in the balls.
I'll kill you. Do you doubt anything I've said? Do you doubt what's in the reports that have followed me around all my life? What do they say? If you had to sum it up. They say I'm insane. No, it's okay. You can nod, because it's true. I am insane. Nod! I know it's going to be hard for you to abide by my rules. The abstinence part most of all. So I'm going to make it easier for you.
She puts on an industrial eye protection mask, then switches on a tattoo gun. She dips the needle in a pot of black ink, then straddles Bjorman.
Lie still. I've never done this before. And there will be blood.
She begins tattooing his chest. On the hall floor, there are several objects strewn about and stains stretching towards the bedroom. In the cottage, Mikhail drinks a cup of coffee as he looks through the parade photos in detail. By watching them in sequence, he gets a kind of time-lapse view of that day in 1966. He sees something appears to disturb Harriet, and she leaves her friends. He watches closely as something sours her mood and she hurries away. Mikhail takes his glasses off. He looks over his shoulder. Dawn is breaking over Bjorman's apartment block. In the kitchen, Lisbeth, who wears Alice Cooper-style black eye makeup, drinks a glass of water. She gathers up her stuff and looks down at Bjorman, still spread-eagled on the floor. She has tattooed "I am a rapist pig" on his chest and abdomen. She tosses down a pair of wire cutters and leaves. Mikhail returns to the cottage from a walk and finds Pernilla waiting for him on the doorstep.
Hi.
Hi.
What are you doing here?
On my way to Skellefteå. I can only stay a couple of hours.
They share a hug and a kiss.
What's in Skellefteå?
Bible camp.
Oh, yeah.
Inside the cottage, Mikhail carries a couple of plates of food out of the kitchen and puts them down on the table beside a pot of coffee. He begins to dig straight in, then stops when he notices Pernilla saying a prayer. She gives him a look.
I'm not dangerous.
It's fine. Whatever you want to do is fine. Everybody needs something.
Yeah, just as long as it's not Gar.
I didn't say that.
He pours the coffee.
Well, I haven't been around enough to really know what's going on with you. And I apologize for that. But I'd never want you not to tell me something because you think I might not want to hear it.
That's what I'm doing.
At the station.
Really should have been me visiting you. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It was nice seeing you. Bye-bye.
See you.
Yeah.
They share a hug, then Pernilla walks to the train.
Oh, don't cut too hard on the Catholics.
What?
The article you're writing.
Oh, I'm not writing an article about Catholics.
The Bible quotes by your dad.
She mouths, "I love you," as the train pulls out of the station. The comment about Bible quotes has struck a chord with Mikhail. Back in the cottage, Mikhail looks at the cryptic list of names and numbers from the back of Harriet's notebook. He picks up her Bible, then checks the chapter and verse references against the numbers from the notebook. It leads him to Leviticus. He sits down and reads the relevant quotes.
A woman who is a medium or a sorcerer shall be put to death by stoning. If a dove is the sinner's offering, the priest shall wring off its head, cleave its wings, and burn it upon the altar.
Mikhail makes a call from a phone box.
Hello.
Detective Morel, it's Mikhail Blomkvist.
Yes, hello. How are you? I'm not still freezing in here to start a home, for your sake.
You know that Rebecca case you mentioned?
Would you recall her last name?
Of course I do. But what has that to do with anything?
Nothing, probably.
Jakobson. Rebecca Jakobson. And how was she killed?
She was decapitated.
Her arms were cut off and she was burned. But all that happened in the 1940s. What have you found?
I'm going to have to call you back.
Why?
He sees an ambulance speeding over the bridge towards the island. Mikhail runs across a field to intercept the ambulance and a couple of other cars following. One stops for him. Martin's driving it.
Is it Henrik?
Yeah, we were talking. He started rubbing his arm and then he collapsed.
Think he's going to be okay?
I don't know, Mikhail. I honestly don't know.
You gotta go.
I'm sorry.
I'll talk to you later.
Martin speeds off. Later, Mikhail's at the cottage. He leaves his computer and opens the door to Frode.
Evening.
Frode steps inside.
How is he?
Well, the good news is he survived. How he does now, we'll have to see. He's in intensive care.
Right.
Oh, may I have one of those?
You want a sandwich?
Small scotch.
Sure.
Mikael uncorks the bottle and pours him a measure.
Thank you.
I hate to be indelicate, but Henrik promised me something when I agreed to do this.
Yeah, very strong.
I need to know what he has on him. Now, in case,
In case he dies. Well, that is indelicate.
And I apologize.
Well, I don't know what he has on him, if you're asking me, and he can't tell you in the condition he's in, so...
We also didn't discuss who I'd report to if something should happen to him.
Oh, well, you'd report to me, of course. Well, we both know that nothing's going to come of this, don't we?
No. No, we don't know that.
What do you mean?
I may have found something.
You're joking. What have you found?
The last time I reported on something without being absolutely sure, I lost my life savings. I need a research assistant. Can you authorize that?
Yes. Do you have one in mind?
I can find someone.
I know an excellent one. She did the background check on you.
The what?
Well, you don't think we can hire just anyone without doing a background check.
I want to read that. Herr Frodo was kind enough to share your report with me. The investigator's name, that is her name, yes? See, I can't find any record of her, and I'm pretty good at that kind of thing.
Would it really matter what her name is?
Well, it would if I wanted to speak to her, yes.
It's against policy.
You sure?
I just like your sources, you understand?
Okay. Here's a name for you. My sister. She's also my lawyer. She'll be contacting you. There are things in here that can only have come from one place.
Armansky looks aside awkwardly.
The reason you can find no record of her is because her records have been sealed. She's a ward of the state.
What's that got to do with anything?
She's had a rough life. Can we please not make it any rougher?
The screen fades to black. In a heaving nightclub, Lisbeth sits alone in the crowd, sipping a drink and smoking a cigarette. All around her, young people party the night away. Lisbeth spots a girl of about her age coming over to her table. The girl puts a drink on the table and Lisbeth smiles, then looks aside a little coyly. The girl smiles warmly at her. Now standing, Lisbeth and the girl kiss passionately. Lisbeth gropes the other girl's crotch as they kiss. The screen fades to black. Back at her apartment, Lisbeth wakes with a start. The girl from the nightclub is asleep beside her in bed. Lisbeth starts to get up. Mikael walks up the steps to Lisbeth's apartment block, carrying a takeout breakfast. Inside, Lisbeth gets dressed. Mikael knocks on her apartment door. She glances at the slumbering girl.
Who is it?
It's Mikael Blomqvist.
She turns away from the door, looking panicked.
Actually, I'm not really up yet.
May I come in, please?
She opens the door a crack, then recoils as he throws it open and steps inside.
Hi. You and I need to talk. I've got us some breakfast. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you had some
company. Hey! Who do you think you are?
I'm the guy you know better than my closest friends do. Why don't you put some clothes on? Get rid of your girlfriend. We need to talk.
Looking a bit unsure, Lisbeth goes back into the bedroom and rouses the girl as Mikael looks around the kitchen.
I'm sorry, you have to go. Okay.
The girl gets out of bed. In the kitchen, Mikael sets the table for breakfast. In the bedroom, Lisbeth takes a taser from a drawer and slips it into her back pocket.
Do you need me to stay? No.
Mikael starts unpacking the food he's brought as the girls emerge from the bedroom.
Bye.
Bye.
The girls go to the door. Before leaving, the girl gives Lisbeth a kiss.
Bye. Sorry. It's okay.
Elizabeth turns to face Mikael, who's still in the kitchen.
I guess I must have alarmed you turning up like
that. If you touch me, I'll more than alarm you.
That won't be necessary. Your report, very detailed. Just for me, it wasn't very entertaining.
It wasn't meant to be.
When I write about people, I try to entertain the reader.
Wennerström wasn't entertained much.
She gets a cigarette and a lighter.
Your boss, Romansky, now he tells me you only do jobs that interest you, so I suppose I should be flattered. You gonna sit down? He also says that you're the one he goes to when the job is, sensitive. That's the word he used. Sensitive. I'm going to use illegal, because that's what it was when you hacked into my computer. No, I'm not going to do anything about that. I could, but I won't. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you a story, and if it entertains you, maybe you'll decide to help me research further. And if not, I'll do the washing up and you'll never see me again. You know, you should eat that.
What kind of research?
Elizabeth. Oh, can I call you Elizabeth? I want you to help me catch a killer of women.
She's interested.
I've got RJ, Rebecca Jacobson. I've got absolutely no idea who the rest of these people are or how they're connected to the death of a 16-year-old girl, but they must be somehow. So what we're going to do is find out who they are, what happened to them, and what these Leviticus verses have to do with anything.
She gets up from the table.
What do you do?
Getting started. You can keep talking if you want.
Well, don't you need to look over these?
I got it.
He insists she takes the papers. She does so and immediately puts them to one side. A taxi carries Mikael across the bridge linking the island to the mainland. In her apartment, Lisbeth is busy working on her computer. She types in keywords: rape, decapitation, dismemberment, fire, altar, priest, prostitute. On the island, the taxi pulls up and Mikael gets out. Lisbeth packs a bag, then carries on working. She types more keywords: Mary, Magda. Lisbeth finds several old police cases fitting the criteria she entered. Each has a full police report not digitized against it. She packs up her laptop. At the cottage, Mikael picks the cat's bowl up off the doorstep.
Cat!
He goes inside, taking the bowl with him. He goes through to the kitchen and puts the bowl on a worktop. He manages to catch a bottle he inadvertently knocks off the fridge. As he sifts through some cutlery, he's unaware the cat is behind him on the desk. He turns around and sees the cat. He goes over to the desk and pets the cat.
How'd you get in?
Elizabeth ties her bag to the back of her motorbike, then rides off. At the police station, she talks to an older officer.
No one has asked me about Magda in over 40 years. Why would a young lady like you want to know about such an awful murder?
It interests me.
Does it?
At the cottage, Mikael has the locks changed.
Her husband was the first suspect. The husband is always the first suspect, and usually the last. Not this time. We moved on to a neighbor and a vagrant. Once you get to strangers, it's only a matter of time before you get to gypsies, and you know you're never going to solve it.
How exactly was she killed?
Miss...
Solander.
Sorry, Miss Solander. I hope you don't mind me asking, but when was the last time you ate?
I have a high metabolism. I can't put on weight.
I'm asking because it is better to look at what I'm about to show you on an empty stomach.
Elizabeth stays the night at a hostel.
If a man's offering is a lamb, it shall be a female without blemish. He should lay his hand upon its head, slaughter it, empty its blood on the base of the altar, and he shall be forgiven.
Silently, she reads the Bible. Next day, Mikael meets with Froda at the hospital.
How is he? He needs surgery, but there's no DNR in place. So it's up to the family to decide, should the occasion arise, whether to resuscitate or not. And they're not good at decisions. So how was it with Miss Solander?
She said yes. Look, do you think I might be able to see him?
He was asleep the last time I looked, but let me check.
Thank you.
Don't check. Tell him to pack his things and leave.
Mother, please.
Don't use that tone with me.
Isabella, Mr. Blomkvist works for him.
We should put this to a vote.
Don't be an idiot, Barrier. We all know what Henrik wants. Can we please just do that?
Henrik is fighting for his life in there. This is the last thing he needs.
Excuse me, Mrs. Wanger. There's no smoking in here.
Isabella turns to Mikael.
Go back to Stockholm. When we need a family chronicle written by a libelist. We know who to call.
Mikhail goes. Lisbeth rides a motorcycle at a fair clip back to the police station.
Right. Thanks. This way, miss.
Later, Lisbeth is outside what looks like an old sawmill.
If a woman approaches any beast and lies with it, you shall kill the woman and the beast. Their blood shall be upon them.
She turns and watches a train go past on a nearby track. At the cottage, Mikhail pins up a cutting about Berger Wanger. Martin knocks at the door.
My family's impossible. That's why the company's such a mess. I apologize for my mother's behavior.
I'm used to it.
There's nothing to do with you. It's between her and Henrik. She lost it when my father died, and her drinking and her got so bad, Henrik took me and my sister away from her and left her excommunicated in the old house on the other side of the island. She hasn't forgiven her. You must stay. You're the last chance Henrik has at some kind of resolution. Put this to rest one way or another. I'll keep my mother away. But please, hurry.
Of course.
Standing outside the cottage, they turn and see Lisbeth ride up. She takes her matte black Simpson helmet off.
Lisbeth, I'll get that.
It's okay.
This is Martin Wanger.
How do you do?
Fine.
She ignores Martin's outstretched hand and marches into the cottage.
It's a girlfriend or...?
Assistant.
Oh. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night.
Martin hands his glass to Mikhail and goes. Mikhail steps inside.
Any problems finding the place?
Everyone in town knows who and where you are.
That's comforting. Are you hungry? I can make you a sandwich.
Nope.
You know, I used to have a motorbike, a Triumph.
I know. The 5 cases from Harriet's list, and 5 more she missed. 3 I'm sure of. Rebecca was the first, just as you thought. The second, M.H., is Mary Holmberry, a prostitute in Kalmar, murdered in 1954, matching Leviticus 20:18.
Right, if a man lies with a woman having her sickness, he has made naked her fountain, and she has uncovered the fountain of her blood.
She was raped and stabbed, but the cause of death was suffocation with a sanitary napkin.
Okay.
R.L., Raquel Lund, 1957, a cleaning woman and part-time palm reader, tied with a clothesline, gagged, raped, head crushed with a rock. Leviticus 20:27.
A woman who is a medium or sorceress should be put to death by stoning. I usually like to smoke outside.
Sarovit, 1964. Daughter of a pastor, tied to her bed, raped, charred in the fire that burned down her house. Leviticus 21:9.
The daughter of a priest who profanes herself by playing the harlot profanes her father and shall be burned with fire.
Magda Lovisa Hurberry, 1960. Found in a barn, stabbed and raped with farm tools. The cow in the next stall had its throat slit. Blood was splashed on her and hers on it.
Leviticus 20:16. If a woman lies with any beast, you shall kill the woman and the beast. Their blood is upon them.
Leah Persson, 1962. Found by her sister in their pet shop. Raped, beaten. The killer uncaged the animals, smashed the aquariums. There was a parakeet inside her. Next, Eva Gustafsson, 1960. A runaway. Raped, strangled. A burnt pigeon tied around her neck. Lena Anderson, 1967. A student. Raped, stabbed, decapitated.
Okay.
I'm not finished.
All right, we're looking for a serial murderer, but what could that have to do with a teenager living on an island?
She was looking for him, too.
Rape, torture, fire, animals, religion. Am I missing anything?
The names. They're all biblical. The first woman, the whore, the Virgin Mary, Rebecca, Sarah, all from the Old Testament.
Which means they're all Jewish. One thing the Wangers have more than their fair share of is anti-Semites.
He points to Harold's house.
There's one. Right there.
Elizabeth looks curiously over at the house.
I can sleep on a couch.
Okay. Oh, yeah, there might be a cat somewhere. Good night.
Good night. Harriet's name isn't.
Isn't what?
Jewish.
Yeah.
Mikhail disappears into the bedroom. Morning. Computer printouts are stacked neatly in a row. A gallery of gruesome crime scene photographs. A slow inkjet printer prints profiles of the victims as Lisbeth casually browses personal photos on Mikael's laptop. She quickly closes them as Mikael wakes and comes through from the next room. He frowns at Lisbeth.
What are you doing?
Reading your notes.
They're encrypted.
Please, have some coffee.
Okay. Then we're going to have a very serious conversation about what's yours and what's mine.
It's amazing what you figured out with the parade photos.
Thank you.
It's too bad you don't have hers.
Who's?
A woman in the crowd.
Her.
Lisbeth tenses as Mikael reaches over her.
Sorry.
He clumsily controls the laptop.
Yeah, I didn't close that. No. No. That's the one. Where the fuck's that? That's down there, isn't it? Okay. Oh, yeah.
A photo of a car with a partially obscured decal on its back window.
What does that say there?
N something R S J.
It's not sure, huh?
Then something K. Something R I S.
Carpentry.
Well, we need to find a carpenter.
He steps outside for a cigarette.
Fuck!
Lisbeth snaps round in her seat and goes briskly to the door. Lying mangled on the patio is the cat, now dead, its limbs smashed and broken. Lisbeth grabs her digital camera to document it. Its snapped limbs have been bent into the shape of a swastika. Mikael tries not to vomit. They glance over at the neighboring house. Astride her motorbike, Lisbeth swaps loops with Mikael outside a car hire place. She drops her visor and rides off. Mikael gets in a car and drives. Lisbeth tears down a long straight road flanked by rocky outcrops and tall trees. Mikael's Volvo pulls up outside a hardware store and he goes inside. He shows the photo of the car to a store clerk.
The carpentry shop is gone. I don't even know if he worked there or not, but if he did, maybe he used to come in here for hardware.
I don't recognize him. Sorry.
Oh, I have to stop somewhere.
I'm no detective, but 1966, I would have started a retirement home.
Lisbeth rapidly overtakes cars as she tears through a tunnel. Mikael interviews an old guy in her home.
This is Brian Lunskid.
Do you know where I might find him, the son?
Next to his father at the cemetery. He was killed in an accident on a construction site years ago.
He crosses a note out.
But she might still be alive. His widow.
Do you know where I might find her?
Lisbeth motors down the off-ramp of a flyover. Back at the wheel, Mikael sips coffee and consults a sat-nav as he drives.
In 1966, you were in Hedestad with your husband.
Who took these?
A local photographer. You were taking pictures too that day, and I'd love to look at them if by some miracle you still have them.
It wouldn't be a miracle. We were on our honeymoon. But why?
This girl, yeah? You can see her better in the enlargement. See, that's you there. Just after this was taken, after she'd seen something across the street, she was murdered.
Widowed Mildred pales. Prim, silver-haired Mildred trots past a piano into the next room and returns with a photo album.
There you are.
Thank you.
Mikael puts on his glasses. Mildred sits down beside him and he opens the album to more parade photos. A reveler wears a devilish mask, another a large replica bird's head. People mill around in the background of a photo taken over Harriet's shoulder. Mikael squints.
Would you mind if I made a copy of this?
No.
A tech clerk.
I can't give you any of this stuff without authorization from Mr. Arnonsky.
So call him.
He shoots her a look. He glances at the phone with a frown, then authorizes the transaction.
Next time, fill out the proper paperwork.
Mikael scans the parade day photo into his laptop. He enlarges the image and zooms in.
Which one are you?
He scrolls across the faces of the men in the crowd. A man in a bowler hat, a policeman, a man with green lapels. Bjerman strolls through an office and gets in a lift.
Going down.
The lift door slowly closes. Standing with her back to him is Lisbeth. her face obscured by the hood of her sweatshirt.
How's your sex life?
She stops the lid.
I didn't care much for your last report. It felt perfunctory, like your heart wasn't in it. Let's see a little more enthusiasm for my recovery in next month. Don't speak. I don't want to hear your voice, just nod. Start looking for a shrink you can bribe to swear under oath he can find absolutely nothing wrong with me. And stop visiting tattoo removal websites, or I'll do it again. Right here.
She recoils slightly as she points at his forehead. Lisbeth jabs a button and the lift continues its descent. The doors open and she hurries out. German clenches his eyes shut. Back at the cottage, Mikhail stares at the wall of mounting evidence and scratches the back of his head. He suddenly stops scratching and takes an article regarding Gottfried Wanker's drowning from the wall. The accompanying photo shows the dock where it transpired. Mikhail descends a slope towards the dock in the picture. He looks pensive. Behind him is a residential cabin. He goes back and tries the door. Finding it locked, he peers in through a window. Inside, he takes a look around. The place is a shambles, long abandoned, with mess strewn all over. He puts the article down and steps over numerous empty beer bottles, crossing between two chairs to regard dusty items in a box on a table. He takes a slim volume from under a hefty hardback and flips through it. It's a children's book. Written on the first page is young Harriet's name. In the fading light of dusk, Mikhail climbs the slope outside the cabin. He stops and looks out over the lake. A bullet thuds into a post next to him. Grazed by the shot, his forehead is now bleeding. Dabbing the wound, Mikhail breaks into a run. He darts through the trees and scurries down a rocky escarpment. Back at the cottage, Lisbeth unpacks a number of compact black security cameras. She stands on a chair and fixes one to the ceiling, then steps back into shot and appears on a video feed. She puts one up outside to cover the entrance, path, and neighboring house. Climbing a ladder, she puts another camera on the wall of a house and peers into the lens, appearing in black and white on the video feed. Mikhail scrambles over a wall outside Henrik's stately mansion and keeps running. Lisbeth goes back inside the cottage and views the video feed on her laptop. She sees Mikhail on screen and turns as he bursts in. Mikhail sits with his legs out of the bath, rinsing his head wound under the shower. Lisbeth takes something from beside the sink.
Is that dental floss?
Yes.
Oh.
She removes her gloves.
You're gonna sterilize that, right?
She turns on her heel and marches out to the kitchen.
Couldn't we just use tape or something?
No.
She grabs a bottle of vodka.
What?
Striding back in, she douses the dental floss.
Thank you. Jesus! Ow!
Drink.
Then him. He swigs from the bottle and she goes to stitch the wound.
Just be careful, it's my eye.
Don't move.
You're not a doctor.
She stitches the wound. He grimaces in pain as she feeds the floss through his flesh. They go through to the bedroom.
Take off your wet floss.
Thank you.
She steps out of the room.
Yeah, I think it's stopped bleeding. It's fucking hurt.
He strips down to his underwear. Lisbeth looks out through a window and turns off the lights. Mikhail sits down on the bed in his briefs. Lisbeth hits a button on the laptop, then closes it.
I mean, madness. This is fucking madness.
Lisbeth glances through at Mikhail, sitting head hung in the bedroom, then removes her belt.
Oh, Jesus, that hurts. Fuck.
Talking to himself, he dabs his head wound. Lisbeth enters behind him in a vest and knickers.
This is insane. These people... Somebody was shooting at me. It wasn't an accident.
No one's shooting at you now.
She stands before him and removes her knickers.
You know, I'm pretty sure this is a bad idea.
Why?
Well, apart from the fact that I'm old and we work together, it's...
You work with what's-her-name and that's worked out for you?
Yeah, well, I do have some standards, believe it or not.
She peels her vest off.
You need to stop talking.
She pushes him back on the bed and straddles him, kissing him on the mouth, then biting his nipple.
Hi. Oh.
She's lean and hard-bodied, with small, perked breasts and a shapely bottom. Reeling up, she inches his briefs down behind her. Mikael tugs them down further, then clutches her hips as he enters her. She writhes in sultry, wave-like motions. His hands caress her body. He sits up and flips her onto her back. They kiss as he gyrates between her legs. Lying on her back, Lisbeth smokes a post-coital cigarette.
Do you want me to open the window?
Mikael lies propped up on his elbows, gazing at her. She hands him the cigarette and he takes a drag. She closes her eyes and he stares at her thoughtfully. Morning. Lisbeth sits smoking in the kitchen, her hair a tousled mess. Up and dressed, Mikael enters to find breakfast already on the table. He smiles and she takes a bite of toast. He rubs his eyes.
I like working with you.
I like working with you too.
They share a look and she drops her gaze. They visit Froda and Martin.
It could have been a stray shot.
Well, not by Gunnar. If he wanted to shoot him, he wouldn't be here.
And then we have poachers. They shoot at anything that moves.
Or he's right, dear. What if he is? This has to stop.
Do you want to stop, Mikael?
Look, I have police reports, photos, Henrik's notes, my notes, Lisbeth's research. What I don't have is Vanger Industries records. That's what I want.
Why?
Will you authorize it?
With the private corporate records? Or how far back?
Henrik said I could have access to everything I needed. This is what I need.
That's not what he meant.
I'll sign a non-disclosure statement, if that would help.
Just a minute.
Froda and Martin step aside to talk.
I think Henrik would say yes.
That's why he has me, to protect him from himself. It's insane.
What have we got to hide?
After 120 years of business, probably a lot.
This is what he needs to finish. He should have permission.
Lisbeth and Mikael stroll together.
What am I looking for?
Any connections between Vanger Industries and the towns where the women were killed. And everything about Froda.
Lisbeth rides up outside Vanger Industries. Inside, a security guard leads her into a warehouse of corporate archives. He gestures to a woman in a glass-walled office, and Lisbeth sets down her things. Mikael taps through photos of the car crash on his laptop. He stares at a man lurking in the back of one shot. He stops on another image of the same man holding a camera. Mikael goes to the profiles comprising the family tree on his wall. He looks at one. Harold, married to Ingrid. Beneath it, Cecilia, not part of Vanguard Industries. He prints a document and leaves. Lisbeth works at a desk in the Vanguard Industries archives. With Cecilia.
Your father was taking pictures that day that no one has seen. I'd like to take a look at them.
So ask him.
Well, I was wondering if you could do that.
I don't speak to him, as you know.
Could you make an exception, in my case?
Are you afraid to be in the same room with him? I'm not saying you shouldn't be.
So you won't help me?
She looks down.
Sorry.
And tosses the photos onto the table. Mikael picks them up and gazes at her imploringly.
Please?
The archivist.
Are you finished? I need to know where all factories, offices, and projects were from 1949 to 1966.
You already have everything.
No, I don't. Nothing on subsidiary corporations, partnerships, or suppliers.
Then you'll have to do with that.
Mr. Fruda said I have access to whatever I need. This is what I need.
He said you have access to this floor.
Call him.
Lisbeth glares. Prim, officious Lindgren picks up the telephone. They step into a lift, and Lindgren dons latex gloves. A steel shutter door descends. Lindgren stands on a small ladder between two tall rows of shelves. She takes two filing boxes down and adds them to others on an already groaning trolley. Lisbeth watches impassively as Lindgren struggles to wheel the trolley on. At home, a hunched and elderly Harold smokes as he descends towards Mikael on a stairlift.
Thank you for seeing me.
Harold heads for a door.
Come in.
They go to the next room.
Tea?
Please.
There are rifles on the wall and books stacked precariously in piles. Wartime photographs hang in wonky frames on the wall. Mikael looks at one.
Sven-Olof Lindholm. Me.
Handsome.
Bifurgard. Me. Per Engdahl. But your interest is in my more candid photographic work.
Friends, relations, that kind of thing.
Please.
Seated, Harold gestures and Mikael opens a drawer. At the archives, Lisbeth spreads a map out on a desk. She smooths it down with her palms and leans on it for a moment. Her eyes rove in thought, and she gets a list of victims from the next desk. Examining it, she sees that the locations of the girls' deaths each correspond to Vanger Industries offices, marked with V's on the map. Harold pours tea.
Blom or blue?
Blomqvist.
Mikael goes through photos.
I'm not a recluse. I don't close my door to anybody. They just don't visit.
Well, perhaps if you redecorate it.
Hide the past like they do? Under a thin, shiny veneer, like an IKEA table? I am the most honest of all of them.
The family?
Sweden.
Their eyes meet. Harold stares grimly, a cigarette smoldering between his fingers. Mikael opens a folder. Inside are more photos. He stares at a picture of a man with some soldiers.
Landscape? Some nice landscapes there?
Who is this? The blurry one. I can't tell.
Harold leans forward.
Oh, there's Godfrey's boy.
That's Martin.
Yeah, handsome but useless young man, like his father.
Lindgren comes out of her office at the archives. Lisbeth has placed pictures of the victims by all but one of the V's on the map. Lindgren finds her rummaging through a filing cabinet.
We're closing.
Nowhere near finished.
I'm not authorized to stay late.
I am. And I need access to everything, including anything that's locked.
Lisbeth looks round at Lindgren.
Call Frida.
Lindgren turns and goes. Lisbeth goes through more folders as Lindgren locks her office. Defeated, she tosses her keys down on Lisbeth's desk.
Leave the keys with the guard.
Look.
Lindgren leaves. Dates on folders read 1957, 1960, 1962. She leaves through a folder containing mounted new clippings. She stops on one. Carlin and Vanger rebuild local port. She sits down at the laptop and tabs through scanned evidence. A file states the occupation of one of the victims, fortune teller and cleaning lady, Carlin Construction. Lisbeth glances at the news clipping in the folder. Beneath the photo it reads, Gottfried Vanger and Carlin shaking hands. She brings up the image of Gottfried from Mikael's wall, followed by a spreadsheet detailing each victim and the manner of their death. She leaves through a folder and finds another news clipping. Vanger Group acquires Carlson Shipping and Freight. The page is headed Kalmar, 28th of the 10th, 1954. She enters the name Gottfried, followed by a question mark beside two of the victims on the spreadsheet. She turns to a page in the folder headed Karlstadt. The news clipping sports a photo of the same man. She enters the name Gottfried once again. At the cottage, Mikael zooms in on Mildred's parade photo to a figure in a blazer standing under the clock. His face is half obscured by a balloon. The time on the clock is just after 20 to 2. He props the photo of Martin and the soldiers against the screen and looks at it. Lisbeth finds a page of a newspaper. Vanger Industries investing in Uddevalla. Miss Lee Persson found strangled. Brutal rape, torture and murder discovered. She looks round on hearing a door slam. There's nobody there. The next entry on the spreadsheet is Lee Persson, 7th of the 6th, 1962, Uddevalla. She enters the name Gottfried beside this entry too. Mikael puts Harold's photo of Martin and the soldiers beside a photo of Lena Andersen and regards them. He picks them up and furrows his brow. On the breast of Martin's blazer is a distinctive crest. There's a similar one on the shirt Lena is wearing. Lisbeth leaves through a ring binder of newspaper clippings. In Memoriam, Gottfried Vanger, 1927 to 1965. Mikael steps outside to make a phone call.
Shit.
Mikael looks up at Martin's cottage on the hilltop, then goes back inside. Lisbeth compares the date of Gottfried's obituary to the chart chronicling the murders. Gottfried is reported to have died in 1965, but the next murder on the list occurs in February 1967. She puts several question marks next to this entry, then stretches and walks off. The entry reads, Lena Andersen, 22nd of the 2nd, 1967, Uppsala. Then, in the suspect column, numerous question marks. Mikael removes his glasses and his eyes roam in thought. Leaving the photo of Martin and the profile of Lena Andersen on top of his laptop, he hurries out again. Lisbeth gets into the lift at the archives. She pushes a button, and the shutter door rolls down. Mikael climbs the hill in near darkness and approaches Martin's single-story house. Dim lights are on inside. Lisbeth walks between two rows of shelves and turns a corner. Mikael walks up to Martin's stylish glass-walled house and peers in. There's no sign of anybody, so he tries the door. It's locked. He walks along the outside of the house and looks into the spacious, uncluttered living space with its clean lines and white surfaces. Dim spotlights illuminate the room. There's nobody inside. He slides a glass door open and leans cautiously in, his eyes scanning left and right.
Martin?
A Range Rover cruises over the bridge to the island. Closing the door, Mikael goes to the kitchen island and draws a large knife from a knife block. The Range Rover continues its journey through the darkened lanes. Mikael strides confidently along a corridor, brandishing the knife. He tries a door and finds it locked, then enters another featureless, minimalist room, checks through another door and pauses, deep in thought. Lisbeth exits the lift and flips her hood up as she makes a selection at a coffee machine by the main security kiosk. She turns away from the guard's watchful gaze. The Range Rover pulls up outside Henrik's house. A figure gets out and stares over at the cottage. Mikael pads around Martin's house with his eyes peeled. Lisbeth helps herself to a chocolate wafer from a vending machine and walks away with her coffee. The guard in the kiosk picks up a clipboard and pen. Mikael walks purposefully to the corridor and stares along it, eyes wide. He walks slowly along the corridor. He turns and starts towards a room with a windowed metal gun safe. He enters and squints out through the glass door into the blackness of night. He turns to see three rifles stored upright in the safe. He heaves a sigh and looks around with a frown. He tries a door off the adjacent room. It's locked. Lisbeth chews a chocolate bar and sips her coffee as she walks back through the archive. The Range Rover descends a sloping track and its headlights shine in on Mikael, who quickly retreats from view. The driver's Martin, who casually gets out of the vehicle. Having not seen Mikael, he reaches into the back of the car for a rifle bag. Mikael retreats, closing a door behind him. He breaks cover and scurries back down the corridor. As if spying Martin's reflection, he darts out of the way and manages to remain undetected as Martin enters. Quick on his feet, Mikael runs out of the living room as Martin strolls in. Martin frowns and his eyes rove. Mikael walks backwards through the bedroom and quietly opens a glass door leading outside. Martin seems to notice something. He puts down the bag and strolls to the door Mikael entered through. It's been left ajar. As Martin slides the door open, Mikael scarfers and slips on the grass slope outside. Martin turns and sees him.
Mikael! Hi there! Your evening stroll? Yes, that's right. How are you?
Good.
I stopped by the hospital on my way home. Henrik asked me to ask you something.
What was that?
Come on in. I'll make you a drink.
Martin heads back to the door as Mikael climbs the slope. On the map spread out in the archives, Lisbeth's plastic coffee cup rests by the photo of two victims, each by a corresponding V symbol. One of them is Lena. Lisbeth leafs through a book and comes upon a picture of a society dinner. She reads, seated at the Vanger table, Master of Ceremonies Oscar Holm, left, Henrik Vander, center, and Martin Vanger, far right, currently studying in Uppsala. Her index finger is drawn to Martin, who wears the blazer with the crest on it. She quickly tabs through to the parade day photo of the man beneath the clock. Narrowing her eyes, she identifies the same crest on his blazer.
Hello, Martin.
Shut the door. It's quite windy.
Mikael slides the door shut and stands with Martin in his kitchen.
What happened to you?
When?
Just now.
I fell in the dark.
You don't have a flashlight? I'll get you one.
I just wasn't being careful.
Martin takes a flashlight from a drawer and tosses it to Mikael, who catches it.
How's the investigation going?
Nothing new to report.
No? Dirk says the girl is really clever.
Pouring two large drinks, Martin notices the knife is missing from the knife block.
Maybe she'll tear something up.
Maybe. Thank you.
Martin rounds the kitchen island with the drinks.
So what did he say?
What?
You said Henrik asked you to ask me something.
Well, I just did.
What?
How's the investigation?
Oh, yeah.
That was his question.
Mikael spots the rifle propped up on its back by a white ottoman. He looks nervous. Martin spots this and smiles.
Do you hunt? We should go hunting together sometime.
Sure.
Mikael nods and looks at the floor.
Nothing at all. New to report?
No, nothing.
I can see you're anxious.
No.
Well, I mean to get home after the walk.
Yeah, well, so, I suppose I am.
To have dinner with your girlfriend.
Assistant.
Martin puts his glass down and goes to the drawer.
We'll have better luck with a gun.
I'm sorry?
When we go hunting.
He produces a pistol.
A gun, rather than a knife.
He gestures at the knife block. Mikael looks worried.
I want to show you something.
He starts across the room.
Bring your drink. Leave my knife.
Mikael seems to wither under Martin's unerring glare. Averting his eyes, he takes the knife from his sleeve and drops it onto the kitchen counter. Lisbeth strides out of the lift in her motorcycle leathers and dumps the keys at the security kiosk. The guard is absent from his post. At Martin's...
To the right.
He guides Mikael along at gunpoint. Lisbeth makes a call on her mobile.
I leave a message, okay?
No, it's harder than shooting someone. Just missing him. That was a very good shot up at the cabin.
It didn't work. I'm here.
Mikael, it did work. You're here.
He swipes a security card and a door opens. Lisbeth hears away from the Vanguard Industries archives on the motorbike. Martin points his pistol at Mikael, who descends stairs ahead of him. They enter a room with metal tanks, pipes snaking along the walls, and rows of yellow levers. Mikael stops by a door and looks back at Martin. Martin swipes a key card and the door opens.
Inside.
Mikael steps into the dark room beyond. Martin hits the lights, illuminating a torture chamber. Holding an oxygen mask to his face, he pushes a button, releasing knockout gas from pipes throughout the room. Mikael collapses and his glass smashes as he hits the cold, hard floor. Lisbeth rides over the bridge at speed. Mikael is winched upright by a harness around his neck, a video camera trained on him from a tripod. He finds his wrists handcuffed to his sides. He half perches on a leather footstool, his legs dangling slightly and his head at waist height. Martin walks over and proffers another drink.
Spill your drink.
Mikael turns his hand, palm up, and Martin places the glass in it. Mikael slumps awkwardly in the harness. Martin puts the gun down.
Why didn't you just go home?
May I?
Martin sets the video camera to record and sits down on a leather sofa behind it.
How did you do it? What did you find?
Mikhail grimaces in pain.
We can talk or we can just get on with it.
Find a photograph. No one's seen.
Well,
you in an Uppsala prep school blazer.
What does that prove?
It says you lied about where you were that day.
Did I?
Or rather, when.
So what? People lie all the time.
It also says that you and Lena Anderson were schoolmates.
Lena. That was a long time ago. Where's this photo now? Is it with all the other crap on your
desk?
There's
a copy on my laptop and there's another copy.
Copy on?
On a secure website.
Secure website. That's a lie.
Martin smiles.
How much does the girl know? I hope it's as much as you do. That'll make it fun. Where is she?
Stockholm. She went this morning.
Oh, that's a lie. She said our office is looking at more old crap. I got a call from our archives manager. She was very perturbed with this girl, Lisbeth. I like that name. Lisbeth. So when Lisbeth leaves, I will get a call from security so I can be at your cottage to greet her.
Martin leans forward.
Can't thank you enough for bringing her to me.
Hey, hey.
Lisbeth marches into the cottage and looks around. Not finding Mikhail, she looks uneasy. She goes over to Mikhail's desk and sees the blurred photo he got from Harold. On the laptop is the parade photo of Martin. Lisbeth picks her bag up off the floor and takes out her notebook computer and starts typing. In his basement, Martin continues his interview with Mikhail.
So, what do you want to know? You're a journalist. Ask me questions.
Held uncomfortably in the harness, Mikhail stares at him.
What do I do with the girls? That's a good question. Well, before I do what we're doing, sit down, relax, have a drink. I like that part a lot. Having a chat when both of you know that one of you is going to die. And afterwards, I just get rid of them, far out of sea. Unlike my father. He left them scattered all over the place like trophies. That's not very smart, if you ask me. He was a loud and garish man. Frankly, he got what he deserved. You can't be a sloppy technician like that. You can't drink to excess like he did. This takes discipline. It's a science of a thousand details. The planning, the execution, it's the cleanup. I guess I don't have to tell you, but you're going to create quite a mess here. Shh. Let me ask you something. Why don't people trust their instincts? They sense something is wrong. Someone is walking too close behind them. You knew something was wrong. You came back into the house. Did I force you? Did I drag you in? No. All I had to do was offer you a drink. It's hard to believe that fear of offending him is stronger than the fear of pain, but you know what? It is. And they always come willingly. And then they sit there. They know it's all over, just like you do. But somehow, they still think they have a chance. Maybe if I say the right thing. Maybe if I'm polite. If I cry, if I beg. And when I see the hope draining from their face like it is from yours right now, I can feel myself getting hard. But you know, we're not that different, you and I. We both have urges. Satisfying mine requires more doubts.
Lisbeth reviews footage from the security camera she puts up. One of them shows Martin peering in through the window, then looking in an outbuilding. In the basement, Martin turns on a reel-to-reel tape player. His video camera records the whole interview.
It might amuse you to know that while you were upstairs having moose with me and Lee, who, by the way, finds me very conventional, I had Irina down here in that cage. Who's Irina, you might ask? Just another girl. Just another immigrant whore. Who misses them?
Your sister wasn't...
What?
Your sister, Harriet, wasn't just another girl.
You found her. What happened to her?
You help her.
Martin lets go of Mikhail's throat.
You useless fucking detective.
He puts a plastic bag over Mikhail's head.
It's too tight to talk. Good. I'm tired of talking to you.
He starts a winch which yanks Mikhail violently up off the floor, leaving him dangling a couple of feet off the ground. As Mikhail chokes in the bag, Martin wanders over to a workbench and selects a tool. He comes back, and a faint smile plays on his lips as he regards Mikhail's bag-covered head. He pulls open Mikhail's cardigan, popping off the buttons, then uses the tool to slit his shirt open, exposing his bare chest. He undoes the top of Mikhail's trousers, then stands back.
Never had a man in here before.
He turns away. The bag on Mikhail's head inflates and deflates as he tries to breathe.
In fact, I've never touched a man, except my father. It was our duty. Harriet's and mine.
He picks up a knife and walks back over to Mikhail. As he assesses where best to make the first incision, Lisbeth sneaks up behind him with a golf iron. As he turns around, she smacks him square in the face with the iron. He hits the floor and bounces, blood dripping from his mouth. As she releases Mikhail, Martin, his jaw now badly broken, staggers from the room.
There's a gun. There's a gun on the television.
She picks the semi-automatic pistol up and cocks it. Martin flees upstairs.
May I kill him?
Mikhail nods. She sprints off out of the basement and up the stairs after Martin. As she re-enters the house, she looks around warily. There's no sign of Martin. Keeping the gun at the ready, she makes her way into the kitchen and looks around. Outside, Martin violently backs his Range Rover up, then tears off down the road. Lisbeth runs outside and gets on her motorcycle. She starts it up and speeds off after Martin, who drives erratically down the road towards the bridge. The motorcycle starts to gain ground on the Range Rover. Martin sees its headlight appear in his rearview mirror. Lisbeth guns the bike's engine, shrinking the gap between her and the car. Approaches the bridge, she's right on Martin's tail. He sees her try to come alongside him and swerves to block her path. She makes another attempt, and he slews back across the road. The Range Rover's gyrations become more violent as he tries to stop her passing, and the back clips the bridge. Lisbeth guns her engine and streaks through on Martin's left-hand side. He loses control as he comes off the end of the bridge and overturns the car. It comes to rest on its side in the road. Lisbeth comes to a skidding halt, dropping the bike in the process. She takes a deep breath and walks towards the stricken Range Rover as smoke billows from it. She takes the pistol from her pocket and cocks it. Trapped inside the vehicle, Martin looks fearfully through the windscreen as Lisbeth walks towards him. Something shorts out under the bonnet, igniting spilled fuel, and the Range Rover is engulfed in a massive fireball. Lisbeth stops in her tracks and watches as the car and Martin are incinerated in front of her. She uncocks the pistol and walks back to her bike. The screen fades to black. In the grey light of early morning, the emergency services are in attendance at the scene. A hearse pulls away as Martin's body is removed. Mikhail lies in bed. He looks over at Lisbeth lying beside him. They stare into each other's eyes.
How can a 23-year-old, the ward of the state,
She looked steadily back at him.
I'm mentally incompetent and can't manage daily life.
Since when did I say that?
Since I was 12.
What happened when you were 12?
She drops her gaze awkwardly.
I'm sorry. That's none of my business.
I tried to kill my father. Burned him alive. Got about 80% of him.
Oh.
She gets up off the bed.
I made some coffee.
She gives him a coffee and shows him photos of a nude woman.
Is it?
It's Harriet. I found it in Martin's basement among his souvenirs.
Martin didn't deny killing anyone. But when I mentioned Harriet, he was confused. He got angry at me because I couldn't tell him what had happened to her. He didn't kill her. His father didn't do it. He was dead the year before. What if she did somehow manage to get away? And if she is still alive, then there's only one person in this family who'd know where she is.
They look at the pictures of family members he's pinned to the wall, and he singles out the photo of Anita. Plague stumbles on an aeroplane. Across the aisle from him sit a bored-looking Lisbeth and Mikhail, who jolts awake as a bell sounds. At night in London, Mikhail sits in a van and watches as a car arrives at a townhouse. He speaks into a walkie-talkie. He watches tensely as Lisbeth, Plague, and another guy, Trinity, emerge from a basement door of the house. They cross the street to the van, and Plague and Trinity get in the back. Lisbeth gets in the front beside Mikhail.
Your turn.
He nods.
Right. Yeah.
He gets out of the van and walks across the street. Plague lights a cigarette. Mikhail goes over to the front door of the house and rings the bell. Anita opens the door.
Hi. Look, I'm sorry to bother you.
What do you want?
Has no one called you?
About?
Your cousin, Martin.
What about him?
He died in a car accident last Thursday. There's going to be a memorial in
Hiddenstadt. I'm not interested in any memorial.
No, I understand.
What do you understand?
Well, you don't care very much for your family. Look, I just thought you should know.
Now I know.
She shuts the door on him. There's a radio aerial mounted on the back of the van. Mikhail returns to the van and gets in the driver's seat.
How'd it go?
Okay, I think.
She's on.
In the back, Plague and Trinity monitor Anita's internet activity on a laptop.
And she's shopping.
Lisbeth and Mikhail exchange a look. Later, in an hotel room, Mikhail joins Lisbeth on the bed where she's looking at her laptop.
She's still playing solitaire?
Mm.
She hasn't called anyone?
No.
We have her cell phone, too? I'm so sure she was going to lead us to her.
Put your hand back in my shirt.
He does so.
There's only one reason she hasn't called Harriet. She can't. Because Harriet is dead.
They have sex.
No, I was just thinking that.
Just one second.
Okay.
She rides him energetically. She collapses beside him.
What are we going to say?
I was just thinking there could be one other possibility.
She looks up, interested. Day. Mikhail marches into the merchant bank where Anita works. He heads for her office.
Well, we could, absolutely.
She gets off the phone.
What is it now?
Before he died, your brother hung me from a hook.
She looks unsettled.
Harriet.
Her shoulders sag. Outside.
So you sent the flowers?
Yes, I did.
We found in the Swedish family registry that Anita was married, but the family never knew, did they? So I'm guessing
She then came here on her married name passport, and you followed on her maiden name passport.
No, actually, it was the other way around. She thought that it was safer if I traveled to Spencer myself.
Well, what did he think about that?
Nothing. Only that he loved her. She said, if you love me, you will do this and not ask why, and he never did.
And they both died 20 years ago.
Car accident. You found that out, too.
He takes the nude photograph they found at Martin's from his pocket.
Is that you?
She looks up with an uncomfortable expression.
I was 14. The first time he raped me.
Martin?
No, my father. Martin only started after he had died.
Well, why didn't you tell somebody?
I did. My mother.
Henry would have done something.
I almost told him, but I was afraid because of what I'd done.
You
still don't understand, do you? A year after the first time, and there were many times during that year, my father got drunker than usual one night, and he started bragging about the women he'd killed. He quoted from the Bible as he tore my clothes. He tied a belt around my neck. He wanted to kill me. I got out of the house. I went down to the dock. He came staggering after me. I could never fight him off in a small space, but out in the open, I was strong enough to deal with an old drunk.
She whacks him over the head with an oar.
When it was over, I looked up. Martin was standing there, staring at me, and all I'd accomplished was substitute one for another.
Mikael nods.
A couple of months later, Henrik sent Martin to school in Uppsala, and I thought that maybe, just maybe, the nightmare was finally over. And then I saw him the day of the parade across the street. And I knew that it would never be over.
So how did you escape?
Anita, she insisted that I leave everything behind. If I took anything, the police might have suspected that I was still alive. As everyone ate dinner, I was no more than 20 meters away from them. I spent the night there. That's when the search started. In the morning, she came to get me. I'd grown up with that bridge as my link to home. But all I could think is, if I could just get away from them, just get past the police, then I might be safe.
She escapes in the boot of Anita's car.
And I was. Until you showed up.
You're safe now.
She rubs her nose.
How did you get away?
Someone saved me too.
He looks over at Lisbeth, who's sitting at the top of stone steps nearby. Anita follows his line of sight. Back on the island, Lisbeth and Mikael are with Frode. Anna brings Henrik in a wheelchair.
How are you feeling?
I'm fine.
Thank you, Anna.
She leaves them.
I made you a promise.
A weighty dossier.
Whether you found anything or not.
Dossier is headed Wenerstrom.
So, what do you have to tell me?
Mikael smiles. Henrik regards him expectantly. Anna opens the door of the house to Anita, really Harriet. Frode wheels Henrik out of the study into the hall as Harriet steps inside. Frode leaves them alone and walks back up the hall. Henrik wheels himself up the hall towards Harriet. They stare uncertainly at each other.
Hello, Henrik.
An oxygen pipe in his nose, Henrik stares at her, then his shoulders start to heave. Harriet steps over to him and they share a hug. Watching from a distance, Lisbeth and Mikael turn away. Mikael and Frode.
I barely even remember Venestrom working here, much less as being fired.
Well, how could you? It was such a long time ago, which is
kind of more to the point than the money he embezzled from you to start the Venice...
You're referring to the statute of limitations, but I had no idea this is what Hendrik was holding out. If I had, I never would have let him bring you up here. He wasn't trying to deceive you.
Oh, come on. He knows you can't try somebody 35 years after the event. I mean, I like Hendrik, but he knows that.
Well, a man's reputation used to mean something. He still believes that. I'm sure he thought that you could destroy Veniston with this in the court of public opinion.
The court of public opinion now celebrates people's bad behavior.
He's an elderly man.
He promised me Veniston's carcass on a plate. This isn't even the plate. I can't do anything with this.
Yes, of course.
Elizabeth and Mikael are in the cottage.
What happened with Veniston? How did he get you?
I was stupid. I heard something. I got it from an anonymous source who I'm now sure was one of Venistrom's lackeys. It was fake, which he easily proved in court.
You were quite emphatic that the way I looked into your life was illegal and immoral. Would you feel the same about Venistrom?
Go on.
I did some work on my own on him before you hired me. I haven't had a chance to look at it all because you and Harriet fucking Wanger have kept me busy. But I may have something.
You may have something?
Maybe.
They launder money from arms and drug sales and crime syndicates in Russia. And that money accounts for all but 5% of his holdings. The rest ends up in accounts in the Cayman Islands.
And how do you know this?
This time you don't want to know.
This time I do want to know.
I have access to his computer. And his accountants. And his lawyers.
And how do you have that?
Well, I could have gotten it from a source inside the company.
But you didn't.
But that's what you'll say.
And what will you say to me?
Well, that depends if you really want to know.
I do, Mikael. How did you get access?
Erica looks round as Lisbeth comes in carrying a load of shopping. She dumps it on the floor and goes on into the kitchen. Erica looks at Mikael, who shrugs. A TV news report.
Financial journalist Mikael Blomqvist, who this time last year was convicted of libel in a Stockholm courtroom, doesn't seem to have learned from his mistakes. Or maybe he has. In the current issue of Millennial magazine, he now charges the same company that successfully sued him, the Venistrom.
Oh shit, it's the fan.
Criminal activities on a global scale.
What happens now?
Well, he'll say it's a personal vendetta, which won't wash. Police will investigate, FI will investigate. We'll go to court. Maybe he'll go to prison.
You think?
Probably not. These guys never do.
Later, Elizabeth and Mikael are in a cafe. A computer screen shows a headline, Financial Mafia. Wellerstrom accused of wide-ranging crimes. Financial markets rocked by news. Elizabeth looks troubled.
What's wrong with you?
It's embarrassing.
Tell me.
I need to borrow some money. 50,000. I have a chance to make an investment. It's a smart, safe investment.
I really don't think I've got 50,000.
Yes, you do. You have 65,000 in your two accounts. I'm sorry that I know that. You'll get the money back, I promise.
Okay.
Okay.
You want a coffee?
Wellerstrom is on the TV.
These allegations, like the last one from this so-called journalist, are as ridiculous as they are untrue.
I'll be seeing Mr. Blomqvist in court again, and I'm looking forward to it.
What about his documentation?
Fabricated. All of it.
The charity's fraud office isn't quite as certain as Mr. Venistrom.
If even a fraction of what Mr. Blomqvist is alleging proves to be true, not only will there be a securities investigation, but an organized crime inquiry as well.
Mr. Blomqvist names no sources.
And we can't force him to. But we can look for them.
Beginning where?
Beginning with those closest to Mr. Venistrom. Only someone in the inner circle of a corporation like this could have access to this kind of information.
Mr. Venistrom isn't available for a comment today, but I'd be happy to answer your question.
Where is he?
At home, I imagine.
No, he's not. Has he left the country?
I don't think so.
Lisbeth has disguised herself with a blonde wig and covered up her tattoos. She visits Plague, who gives her a fake passport and bank cards. At Zurich Airport, she presents the fake passport.
Okay, thank you.
None the wiser, the passport control officer waves her through. She arrives at a plush hotel and goes to the reception desk.
Welcome to the Dolda Grannies. May I have your passport, please?
She hands it over. The document identifies her as a Norwegian citizen named Irene Nessa. She follows an hotel porter who takes her bags to her room. Inside, she removes her disguise and puffs on a cigarette. Dressed only in her underwear, she steps out of the bathroom and puts on a gilet before sitting down at a desk in front of her computer. She accesses Venistrom's various account details.
With his failure to appear before a Security Exchange Commission panel, a warrant has been issued for the Venestrom Group CEO.
I can confirm that he left Sweden on a private jet that landed in Paris last week. But whether he's still there, we don't know. He can be anywhere by now.
A chauffeur opens the door of a Rolls-Royce Phantom, and Lisbeth in her Irene Nessa disguise steps out. A security camera tracks her as she enters a bank and is taken to see the manager.
Thank you.
I have a number of accounts at Bank of Kronfeld Cayman Islands. I'd like to transfer those accounts and convert them to bonds.
Naturally, you have the clearing codes.
Naturally.
How many accounts will you be transferring?
30.
This will take some time.
For which you will receive a 4% commission.
I will.
Then it won't be a waste of it.
The manager takes the clearing codes.
A Swedish tourist vacationing here in Barbados says he knows where fugitive financier Hans Erik Wennerström is, here in this Caribbean island capital, Bridgetown. Police released this photo yesterday and say they believe it is the disgraced billionaire.
Still in disguise, Lisbeth and a man carrying two large bags step out of the Rolls-Royce on a Zurich street. They go into another bank. In an office, Lisbeth shows another banker the bags are full of bonds.
How many of these would you like to convert for deposit?
All 50 into 5 accounts.
As the banker calculates the value, she sips a cup of tea. She's careful to wipe her lip print from the cup. The banker shows her the value is 3,212,655,732.
Yes, that looks correct.
The banker smiles wryly. Later, in a hotel room, Lisbeth sits at her computer and transfers the funds from the account she'd opened at the second bank into one account in the Cayman Islands. She gets up and lights a cigarette, then stares out of the window into the night as she smokes. Day. Dressed as Irene Nessa, she makes the journey back to Sweden. Along the way, she disposes of Irene's jewelry in a public toilet. She boards a train. In the train's toilet, she removes the blonde wig and the makeup covering up her tattoos. She lights a cigarette and tosses the wig out of the window. Looking like herself, she finally arrives home at her own apartment and lets herself in. She puts her keys down and goes through into the kitchen. She takes her fake passport from her bag and sets light to it with the gas ring on the stove. Mikael and Erica watch the news.
The man who is now being called Sweden's Charles Ponzi may no longer have a country to call home, but does have enough money to buy one. According to the International Banking Commission, Wennerström, a week after the Millennium article appeared on newsstands, began emptying accounts at Bank of Kronfeld in the Cayman Islands. That money, approximately 2 billion euros, was then spread over a number of accounts with the help of this confederate seen here in Zurich.
Footage of Lisbeth as Irene Nessa. She meets Mikael.
Hey.
Hey. The money I borrowed?
Already? Thank you.
Thank you.
A cigarette.
I quit. It was a good investment.
It was okay. And what are you doing later?
I'm seeing my daughter.
Okay.
You look nice.
She half smiles.
It's Christmas again. I'll see you soon.
Mikael watches her walk away up the street. Aware Erica is watching him from the window of the Millennium offices.
Get that call in the office.
A colleague calls Erica and she turns away from the window. The next day, Lisbeth is round at Mr. Palmgren's apartment. They play a game of chess together. Following his stroke, he's still very incapacitated.
I miss our meetings. I'm sure you don't. Why would you? I was always such a headache for you. Never showing up with good news, only problems. I have good news now. I made a friend. I mean one that you'd approve of.
He stares at her and raises an eyebrow.
I'm happy.
Mikael wanders into a cafe.
Hey. Here in Marbella have confirmed the fugitive Hans Erik Wennerström.
shot 3 times in the head at close range in what police are calling a classic gangland execution. The investigation into Wonderstrom's ties to crime organizations worldwide will now turn into speculation. Which of them caught up with him before Swedish authorities could? Wonderstrom spent the last days of his life.
Having noted the news bulletin, Mikael sits down with his newspaper. Lisbeth is in an upmarket tailor's. The tailor shows her a leather motorcycle jacket he's made from a photo of Mikael wearing an identical garment.
It's nice.
Your father?
A friend.
Must be a very good friend.
She looks surprised by the tailor's comment. Back at her apartment, she writes a card, which has a picture of a horse on it, and puts it in an envelope. She addresses the envelope to M. Night. Lisbeth rides her motorcycle down a cobbled street with snow piled at the curbside. She parks on a corner outside Mikael's apartment and removes her crash helmet. She takes a package from the back of the bike, but stops dead when she sees Mikael leave his apartment with Erica. She watches numbly as the couple walk away with their arms around each other. Lisbeth looks down as Mikael and Erica get into a waiting taxi. Lisbeth turns away and flings the package, which has the card attached to it, into a nearby dumpster. She puts her crash helmet back on, gets on her bike and starts it up. A solitary figure, she rides off into the night. The screen fades to black. ITFC audio description by John Walskill and Sam Clark was read by James O'Hara. Cast: Mikael Blomqvist, Daniel Craig. Lisbeth Salander, Rooney Mara. Henrik Wanger, Christopher Plummer. Martin Wanger, Stellan Skarsgård. Frode, Stephen Berkoff. Erica Berger, Robin Wright. Björman, Jorik van Wageningen. Anita Wanger, Jolie Richardson. Cecilia, Geraldine James. Armansky, Goran Vishnich. Detective Morell, Donald Sumter. Wernerstrom, Ulf Freeberg. Palmgren, Bengt C.W. Carlson. Plague, Tony Way. Harold, Per Meyerberg. Pernilla, Josephine Asplund. Anna, Eva Fridjofsson. Harriet, Moa Garpendal. Young Anna, Maya Hansen-Bergqvist. Young Cecilia, Sarah Appleberg. Young Henrik, Julian Sands. Young Isabella, Anna Björk. Young Harold, Gustav Hammersten. Young Martin, Simon Reithner. Young Morell, David Denchik. Young Nielsen, Marcus Johansson. Young Anita, Matilda von Essen. Young Berger, Matthias Palmer. Berger, Martin Jarvis. Isabella, Inga Longgre. Hussein Reza Deban, Young Frode Anders Berg, Nielsen Mats Andersen, Doctor Anders Janssen, Gottfried Jürgen Klein, Tackett Mack, Jesus Carl Josefsson. Photo editor Sandra Andres, Liv Arli Jova, tattoo artist Pierre Sjö Osterblom, TV newscaster Tess Panzer, Gregor Alistair Duncan, Detective Isaacson Alan Dale. Nurse, Julia Rose. Hardware clerk, Peter Karlberg. Forceman, Jan Abramson. Mildred, Lena Stromdahl. Tech clerk, Matthew Wolf. Lundgren, Anne Lee Norberg. Trinity, Leo Bill. Junkie, Marco Albrecht. Reporter at Vanguard, Martina Lotten. FSA official, Anna Carlson. FSA reporter, Yvonne Astrand. Wernerstrom's lawyer, Frederick Dolk. Bankers, Christian Heller, Werner Biermeier. Barbados TV reporter, Christine Adams. Zurich TV reporter, Peter Hottinger. Spain TV reporter, Joy Shiro. Taylor, Bent Walgren. Miriam Wu, Elodie Young. Reporters, Anna Charlotte Gunnarsson, Andreas Bjorklund. Annika, Embeth Davids. Christo Mann, Joel Kinnaman. Magda Loveson, Karen E. Wright. Book of Death Victim, Leah Almada Harshaw. Udavala Detective, George Gerdes. Re-recording mixers, David Parker, Michael Semenik. Sound supervisor, re-recording mixer, Ren Kleiss. Dialogue editor, Malcolm Fife. ADR editor, Richard Quinn. Sound effects editors, David Hughes, Scott Goodill, Kristen Mate, Al Nelson. Foley editors, Tom Brennan, E. Larry Oatfield. Assistant supervising sound editor, Jeremy Malone. Assistant sound effects editor, Koya Elliott. Assistant re-recording mixers, Nathan Nance, James Spencer. Copyright 2011, Columbia Pictures Industries, Inc. and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures, Incorporated, all rights reserved. Columbia Pictures Industries, Inc. and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures, Inc. are the authors of this film, motion picture, for the purpose of copyright and other laws. This is a work of fiction. The characters, incidents, and locations portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to or identification with the location, name, character, or history of any person, product, or entity is entirely coincidental and unintentional. American Humane Association monitored the animal action. No animals were harmed. This motion picture photoplay is protected pursuant to the provisions of the laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication and or distribution of this photoplay may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Sony, make believe. Columbia Pictures, a Columbia Pictures release, a Sony Pictures Entertainment Company.